Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Several kinds of people are directly affected by the partial government shutdown. There are federal workers who are furloughed, not being paid. There are federal workers who must work and are also not being paid. They may get back pay eventually once a deal is reached, but then there are contract workers who have little chance to collect back pay for the work they're missing. NPR's David Wellna has the story.
62-year-old Greg Seymour is an archaeologist who works in the Great Basin National Park that spreads across the Nevada-Utah border. He's employed by a company that's a contractor with the National Park Service, but he's not working.
It's been a couple of weeks now. I actually feel stabbed in the back. It's kind of depressing, actually.
And because he's not billing any hours, Seymour does not expect to get any back pay whenever the shutdown ends.
I was going to buy a truck, brand new truck. That is on possibly permanent hold now because I don't feel like I can trust the economy, my economy especially. So I'm just going to live with what I have.
Seymour did not apply for unemployment insurance when he was first furloughed. He considered it a pittance, but he intends to do so today.
And I'm not really sure it's worthwhile. I've never done that before, so that would be a new experience for me. And frankly, I really don't want to collect unemployment, but if I have to, I will.
And so, too, are many other federal contract employees. New York University's Paul Light is a leading expert on the federal workforce. He says there's been scant public awareness of the contract workers' plight during shutdowns. That's because, unlike federal employees, there is no systematic tracking of those contract workers. What is known is there is a lot of them.
I estimate that we have about 4.1 million contract employees, full-time equivalent. So we've got a very large federal workforce with a majority of employees who are not on Uncle Sam's direct payroll. They are part of the indirect workforce.
And yet they've been directly affected.
I did not think that national politics would be affecting my role as an IT specialist at United States Fish and Wildlife.
That's 33-year-old Joe Panetti. Normally, he gets $22 an hour working for a company in western Massachusetts that contracts with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. But he has not worked at all since the shutdown began and does not expect to recover his lost income.
When you're a contractor, it's understand that there's a certain amount of risk taken with your job. So I don't think that the federal government will see it as something that they need to compensate us for.
Panetti lives alone, and he's already begun collecting unemployment insurance. Hopes of finishing a college degree have been put on hold by the shutdown.
It's going to be rough. I'm digging deep into my savings right now. I would remain solvent for about 2 more months. The problem is I'm already having to sacrifice things to do so. The shutdown has costs, so I might have to take a semester off from school to rebuild my savings.
Panetti expects to still have a job whenever the shutdown ends, but NYU's Light says it's a different matter for those employed by smaller contractors.
And that's where you would expect to see some pretty significant impacts of even a two-week shutdown, even a week shutdown, because the smaller the business, the more likely it is to lay off workers at the first sign that there might be a delay in payment.
Take, for example, Celeste Voigt.
I have 4 people who, besides myself, are out of work.
Voight, who's legally blind, has a vending concession to sell hot meals at two federal workplaces in South Dakota. She and all four of her employees have been idled by the shutdown, and she fears they'll be forced to find work elsewhere. Congress, she says, should do something about that.
I think they should reimburse me as a business so that I can pay my employees, because I cannot buy insurance like anybody else if this is not a natural disaster. It isn't because I am not responsible enough to run a business or I've done something wrong. It's like I'm getting punished because I'm working, trying to help provide for the government workers that are in the building.
According to President Trump, people like Celeste Voight, who've been idled by the shutdown, may be getting something else, a wall along the Mexican border.
Many of those workers have said to me and communicated, stay out until you get the funding for the wall. These federal workers want the wall.
I don't know who he's talking to. So what am I going to say about that?
Again, small federal contractor Celeste Voight.
Apparently he doesn't understand. Anytime there's a government shutdown, whatever the reason, it's not appropriate. I guess we're holding ourselves hostage. That's how I feel.
By we, Voight says she means the entire nation. But she and the thousands of other furloughed federal contractors may be paying the greatest price as this shutdown continues. David Wellner, NPR News, Washington.
Black brother to hell.
This is the week that many government workers will miss their first paycheck. And as the shutdown has gone on, we've been hearing from a lot of them who say they are living from paycheck to paycheck. For some, the promise of back pay doesn't solve the problem of paying your phone bill or your mortgage or putting dinner on the table for your family today. We wanted to better understand why so many people live paycheck to paycheck in America, so we've called on Elise Gould of the Economic Policy Institute. She studies wages, poverty, and inequality. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
So for economists, what's the definition of living paycheck to paycheck?
It's a great question. I would say there's not a uniform understanding among economists. But one thing I would say is that there's a Federal Reserve study that asked families whether or not they could cover an unexpected expense of $400. So if all of a sudden you had to pay $400, would you have enough money to be able to cover that? And 4 in 10 adults, if faced with an unexpected expense of $400, would either not be able to cover it or would cover it by selling something or borrowing money, such as putting it on a credit card. So I think the idea that they don't have enough money to cover that, that is pretty widespread. So that suggests about 40% of Americans have that problem.
We've been hearing from a lot of federal workers who are worried about missing a paycheck. And, you know, some of these people have good jobs, full-time work, long-term employment. Can you be middle class or even wealthy and still live paycheck to paycheck?
Yes, absolutely. We know it costs a lot to get by across this country when you figure in things like housing costs, food, medical care, maybe child care, transportation. And every day there are families that go without. But if you don't have that paycheck, that shock, it could be a paycheck, it could be a health shock, it could be a large car repair. Any of those things can lead to total financial destabilization for many workers and their families. And we're not just talking about poor families. These are middle-class families that could be destabilized by not having that paycheck.
But you have the president touting the strength of the U.S. economy, right? The unemployment rate has been at a historic low. Why are so many people still running out of money every month?
Well, it's really harder to save in the economy today because most workers haven't seen significant increases in their pay to be able to increase their standard of living, giving them any sort of cushion to save. So yes, it's true, we have seen the economy improve. And the statistics that I cited before, those are better than they were at the depths of the Great Recession. And so more people have jobs, and that's all great. More people are returning to labor force. But we have seen stagnation in pay. We have seen that, you know, workers, they need both parents to support a family, right? Those are longer-term trends because we have seen stagnation in worker pay and in family incomes. So without additional resources to draw on, families often have to resort to suboptimal solutions, such as payday lending or going without recommended medical treatment or leaving school without a degree but racking up lots of debt. So these are lots of problems that middle-class families face today.
What's interesting about this is here we are all these years after the economic meltdown and that conversation about people needing to save and create a financial cushion, but you're saying it's actually harder to do that even if more Americans wanted to or tried?
Yes, absolutely, because people's pay is just barely enough to make ends meet. And for many people, it's not enough to make ends meet. And so being able to afford childcare, there's been a lot of information about, you know, how expensive it is for many families. So that one expense can really make or break what it takes to, you know, put food on the table. So I think that there are a lot of things that are happening to families today. They're being stretched incredibly thin, and losing this paycheck for these federal workers, not just the federal workers, also the federal contractors. Federal contractors that are out of work because of the partial government shutdown won't be getting that back pay. So it's not even a question of putting off getting that money. It's a question of never getting it in the first place.
Elise Gould is a senior economist with the Economic Policy Institute. Thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for having this important conversation.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, January 11, 2018, 2019 calendar flip. So I have been told both dates might be incorrect. This is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Consistently, as is stated, if we have any listeners in the known universe, non-white, you have a job, maybe you're self-employed, but you have figured it out. You have a huge office. If you need to take time off, if you're an entrepreneur, you don't take lip from any whites ever for any reason. You don't have any problems with any whites for any of your licensing needs, customers, anything else. No problems. If you do work directly for whites and you figured it out, you get your time off, you get your promotions, you get excellent, I mean, sparkling reviews when it's time for your biannual or annual review. Every time, no worries. You get the highest mark. In fact, they frame your reviews just absolutely sparkling. If that is you, you don't have to worry about being called a nickname. They get your name right every time correctly. And you think you're going to be hanging out there until you are ready to retire, whenever that is, decades, you know, from now, whenever. You should be the first person to call in and give us the specifics on how you did it. The number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. If you need any assistance, you can always listen live. You can go to Black Talk Radio Network and then just click the tab at the very top of the page for the COWS, Context of White Supremacy. When you hit the page, you'll see the little player. You can click it. If we're on live, you can listen right there. You can also go to our page at TuneIn. Go to TuneIn and you can just do a search there for the COWS, Context of White Supremacy. Our page will pop up. Our TuneIn page is linked at Black Talk Radio as well. You can also just dial the number I just gave out, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate, but if you don't want to chime in, you don't have a question or anything to share, you don't have to press star 61. You can just listen via your phone. Also, if you are not able to dial in, you can email untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. If we have any folks, if you are being impacted by the so-called government shutdown, definitely would like to know. We had a listener in the UK, Andrew, who asked how this so-called shutdown was impacting black workers specifically. And I know there's quite a few reports on the 2013 shutdown and how that did disproportionately impact black people. That was much shorter than what's happening right now. And we actually had people write in to talk about the shutdown. But if any of our listeners, if you're being impacted, dial in, give us a ring, or you can email untiljustice@gmail.com and we can share on the live broadcast. As usual, if you are having problems and you would like counter-racist suggestions on how to solve problems without creating new problems, always dial in. If you, you know, just want to get maybe a different way of thinking, a different counter-racist perspective on what's happening with your situation, definitely feel free to let us know that as well. As for commentary about the so-called shutdown, a listener wrote in, "My best friend works for TSA and he won't be receiving a check during the shutdown. They're telling workers that they will receive back pay, but it's not promised, apparently, if you live check to check, as was just discussed. This is a huge problem. I think this may be the case for a lot of TSA workers, many of whom are people of color, non-white. He messaged me this morning to tell me he refused an interview from a news reporter asking questions about the many call-outs from workers that TSA is receiving. It is thought that workers are calling out at the moment in protest of the government shutdown. I'm not really sure if that's the case or not, but needless to say, the workers are upset." System of racism, white supremacy, and there's a video that I posted with this broadcast, like on social media, and it's about TSA workers in New Jersey specifically, and there are a lot of black people, and it speaks to a lot of what this listener wrote in. They were trying to go up and get interviews with people at the airport, and a lot of folks obviously didn't want to talk, and, you know, exactly what he said, fear being terminated if they said something. But there were a lot of black employees. Even the couple people that they did talk to, a lot of them were black males, black females, where I could say, hey, I totally think this, again, is having a disproportionate adverse impact on black people. I don't know the exact numbers of black people that are employed at TSA, but it was quite a few. It would not surprise me if you have a disproportionate number of black people working at TSA, because that's a job that doesn't pay a spectacular amount. Like, you're not going to get rich, but I mean, it's a stable, quote unquote, stable, as you see now, government job, as they would say. So I could see a disproportionate number of black people working at TSA, and man, catching it, man, just having an extremely difficult time right now. All about racism, white supremacy directly, and a border wall. Anyway, and just quickly, because other people wrote in as well, but the report where they were talking about how stressful this was, it sounded, this was just audio, there was no images or anything. But those reports where it was talking about how stressful this is, and some of the people being interviewed were saying, you know, hey, I might have to stop pursuing higher education for the time being. I was thinking about getting a new truck and now I can't do that. I've never been on unemployment and now I'm going to have to do that, you know, and, you know, that's, if that's what I have to do, that's what I have to do. And hearing all of these people say this and talking about, you know, having to defer their phone bills and what have you, particularly a lot of these folks sounded like they were white. Now, white people have much better safety nets, as they say, than black people in a system of white supremacy. There are whole books written about this. We've had authors on the program talk about this. The Color of Wealth, that's one. But essentially, these white, or it's not essentially, the truth, the logic is these whites, regardless how bad their situation is, yeah, I didn't get that new truck that I wanted. Yeah, I had to delay, you know, my education for a while, and I had to dip into my savings, or I had to dip into the children's college fund. White people have folks who can help them out. They have parents and friends just on the basis of being white. I had my last quote unquote white friend who's right here in Seattle. She had a white stranger. This wasn't a family member. This wasn't her dad. This wasn't her brother. This wasn't her pal that she went to elementary school with. We worked together. She had a white guy that she met somehow, let her stay rent free. She didn't have to pay anything. No rent, no utilities, nothing. Rent free for like 6-7 months in California, no less. That's what white people have, massive safety systems in the system of white supremacy. So regardless of how bad it gets for them during the shutdown, they will be in substantially better position than a black TSA employee if this shutdown continues a month, 2 months, who knows? Let's see. Next person wrote in, but the stress, I thought that was really important that they talked about these white people going through with this. This is like black people every day. This is why we have neutralizing workplace racism. What these folks sound like they're going through for this 2 weeks that it's been, 3 weeks that it's been, that is every day on the plantation for black people. And done deliberately. That's the way that those white people sounded. That's the way that they want black people to feel and sound every day in the system of white supremacy all across the known universe. Making statements. Next person wrote in. Lots of questions. So, you know, you can maybe even get a pad or pull out your mobile device and write down some of the questions that are being asked here if you want to respond, because there are quite a few suggesting counter-racist responses or counter-racist perspectives. So, you know, folks that are trying to not be spectators in 2019, be prepared. About 4 years ago, when I was more confused about white supremacy, I began working for a company as a temporary employee. After being employed for a few months, I transitioned to a full-time, still confused employee with benefits. All managers, including the female I directly reported to, are white. Some offices in other states have an all-white staff. Everyone in the department had worked there for at least 15 years. Initially, I was confused about the manager I reported to. There was an employee who worked outside of the office who spoke Spanish but not English and needed help from the payroll department. After 2 weeks of the person not getting help, I hear the white female report to the white female I report to in her office speaking Spanish. I was so confused. It's as if she was ashamed to let the other white people know that she could speak Spanish. She definitely understands white supremacy. Later, as I became less confused, I noticed that she gets her hair straightened professionally. One day, after a hair appointment, she mentioned her displeasure that her hair was too poofy. She would leave for lunch for an hour, and an hour and a half later would come back, sit at her desk, and eat lunch, talk on the phone for an hour. There is a non-white female who the white manager would send us to when she didn't know the answer to something. She would say, "Ha ha, you know, I don't know. Ask the non-white female." It's obvious that the non-white female is more knowledgeable, qualified, and productive than the white female, yet reports to and earns less money than the white female. That is the system of white supremacy. It is not coincidence or happenstance. Their tenure is the same. When I started the job, the manager and overworked non-white female told me that I was a breath of fresh air, in quotes, and so nice. I was often praised for my work. I was always smiling, laughing, and pacifying, and would participate in holiday potlucks, gift exchanges, and the occasional group prayer. I cannot recall there being a group prayer at work, at a place where I worked, a group prayer. No, I don't think I've ever had a group prayer. Never mentioning that I'm not religious and don't celebrate holidays. Question, should I have told them in the beginning that I don't celebrate holidays and am not religious? My response would have been, you know, you can only respond with the information that you have. You know, if you say you do not celebrate holidays, you're more confused about racism at the time. You know, if your thinking was to just pretend or what have you, then you can do that. I think Roz and some of the other listeners have said it is generally best when you start a job, you can just let people know that you're just not a really festive person. You can say whatever it is. I just don't exactly, you can tell them the truth. I just don't participate in holidays. I didn't grow up with all that. So, you know, I don't join in or invest time and energy in all that. So if you all do gift exchanges or potluck dinners or anything like that, you know, I'm going to pass because I just don't celebrate any of those holidays. I think that's always best. And that can cut down a lot of the nonsense from early on, because there can be a lot of pressure with that. Same thing with religion. Although, as I said, that's a little unusual. I can't, most work environments, they try to steer clear of religion. So yeah, I guess, you know, if this is an environment that, you know, is unusual in that manner, then yeah, you can let them know that, you know, yeah, I don't do holidays and, you know, I don't participate in any sort of religious activities or what have you on the job. I'm just, you know, here to be cordial, help out anyone that needs assistance. Absolutely. Let me know and I'll do my best to cheerfully assist you. But yeah, I just don't do the holidays. I think that's always best. Next, like many non-white females, I experienced the creepy white male sneaking up on me while working and the "you look sexy" comments. Instead of addressing him directly, I was diligent in avoiding him. If he was in the break room, I would go to the ladies room or back to the work area until I thought he was gone from the break room. What is an efficient yet courteous way to address incidents like this? The great Walter Beach III says, cut it at the knees. The very first time there is some sort of "you look sexy" sneaking up on you, halt. That is not appropriate, acceptable at all. Do not ever say that sort of thing to me ever again. As long as we work here, or you can just leave it at that. Do not ever say that sort of thing to me or whatever it is. The sneaking up on you, document immediately. And I would ask human resources, what is their policy? In fact, I asked Mr. Fuller, one way you can deal with that, you don't even have to name call. You can just ask if they have any sort of departmental meetings and staff are present. You can just ask, what is the company's policy if employees are saying, oh, you look sexy? And I would quote exactly what was said. I wouldn't name anybody. You're not, as they say, ratting on anyone. You just want to see if they have an official policy and write it down. Make it public that you're writing down. This is the company stance on whether or not this is appropriate. And then what should happen if this sort of thing is being said to an employee of the company? What should happen? How should this be dealt with according to company policy and procedure? Policy and procedure. And you get an A+. If you have the policy and procedure there, you've already read it. You already looked at their policy on sexual harassment, so you already know. And then you can have a follow-up question just to make sure. And I think that, because that sends out such a huge signal that I take this seriously. I have black self-respect, and I am not going to be touched or treated any type of way. So cut it at the knees immediately. Next, if I didn't wear my hair in the usual braid, twist, or bun, a particular white female employee would stop by the area I'm assigned to work and pet stroke my hair. I never addressed it. The first two times, I laughed like a silly slave. The third and final time, I heard her voice coming in my direction. So when she walked up, I put my left arm up to block the attack, smiled and said, oh, please, no. She laughed and walked away, and I never wore my hair down out at work again. What should I have said the first time this happened again? The great Walter Beach III, cut it at the knees. Very first time with anything that's about touch. I mean, that's one that's on the job. Really, anywhere in the system of racism, white supremacy, we should demonstrate the highest exponential levels of black self-respect. If we need to think of Dr. Welsing or say her name or whatever it is. But I mean, wow, that is nothing is more important in terms of demonstrating black self-respect and at least saying I'm a victim of white supremacy, but I'm at least going to use my words and every bit of power that I have to protect the space of my body. So I would just make that very clear. Any type of touching that you don't like or comments, immediately. That is not acceptable. Please do not ever touch my hair again. Thank you. Next, one day a different white woman came up to the area I was assigned to work and said, oh, it's so cold, huh? I kept a small heater under the desk so I wasn't cold, but I said, yeah, it is. And as I'm completing my sentence, she places the back of her cold white hand on my cheek. I was literally motionless and speechless for about 2 seconds. By that time, she had nonchalantly walked away. There was no mention of work. That was the extent of that exchange. It happened so quickly, but what should I have said to her? I would just move away. I think Emmy and some other folks have said any sort of touching in the workplace, even from non-white people. I just don't think that work is an environment to perpetuate or want to encourage any sort of touching. Like, unless I knew this person before we were on the job, or, you know, we've worked together for 20 years and built up some really strong rapport, I'm just not going to do a whole lot of touching with anybody in a work environment beyond a handshake. So anything other than that, it's going to be an immediate, whoa, something way incorrect is happening here. And particularly to the face, that's such an intimate area. I mean, again, just immediate moving away. That is not acceptable. Please do not. I do not do any of that touching and what have you. I'm here to work. Again, if you need any assessment, let me know. But please do not touch me. Watch my personal space. Thank you. I considered, please don't touch me, but white people, especially white women, are masters at being victims and making it seem as if the non-white person is being aggressive or rude to them. Absolutely. Personal space, I would just make it very clear if they want to cry and do. In fact, that's one I would preempt. If it even looks like they're about to cry or anything like that, ho, you violated my space. I'm protecting my boundaries. There's no reason for you to cry. And in fact, if you are going to cry, I would request that you leave my presence. You can get yourself composed because, yeah, this has nothing to do with, you know, you being upset or victimized. I'm protecting my personal space. I think that's allowed. One of the few times, very few instances where I do not suggest asking a question. That, I mean, that alone should stand out. Normally, workplace racism, it's a question. This is one of the few times there's no question about it. Do not touch, and just make that clear. I've since been laid off from this job. Oh, she has details. And I'm on a new plantation. I'm less confused, but I've only been working to produce a code for about a year. Thank you for you and listeners sharing your time and energy. Going by T. So if folks want to answer any of those questions in terms of stopping the touching, the white woman touching her on the face from behind, white male saying that she looks sexy or sneaking up behind her, I think folks have talked about that. Do you participate or getting her to participate in their holiday and religious celebrations? That isn't. Have we had any folks? Have any people here been required to participate in religious activities on the job? I don't even have any experience with that one. But if we have folks who have any experience or thoughts on that, if you want to respond to any of the questions, the number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks dialed in, if you want to respond to any of T's questions, or if you have your own situation, first few folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, it's B from Toronto. Hello, Gus.
Greetings. I guess you were able to call in?
Actually, I was able to. I got a call back, so I wanted to say thank you.
Oh, okay. Right on. No problem. Glad to have you on with us.
Thanks so much. So, yes, actually, this is perfect because this is right up the alley as to what I had just emailed in part not too long ago, which is unwanted physical contact. Okay, just to get some background, I was just doing some online training from the new job that that I'm currently at right now. And I came across the sexual harassment piece as well. So in terms of just finding solutions to reduce the abuses in the workplace, one of these things was the unwanted physical contact, which seems to be a trend, as well as unwanted gestures, terms and phrases. It will also include personal space as well too. Now that it was mentioned in the letter that you had just read, so what I placed here is, you know, please review your sexual harassment policies. If perpetrator, because I call them the perpetrator, if perpetrator continues to make unwanted physical contact immediately, as you've mentioned earlier, you know, like nip it in the bud, stop it right there. Let them know that it's unwanted, and make notes of all subsequent times that the perpetrator continues the unwanted physical contact. So document for sure. And this is regardless of gender as well. So if there's if the male perpetrator is making unwanted contact, if the female to female unwanted contact, it's the same thing that applies. Let's see. There was also some other solutions, possible solutions that I had written as well, which is regarding disability. So there's been this huge push, especially in Ontario, for inclusion as part of the disability and part of the diversity, which is the inclusion piece. Mind you, I don't like to use the term diversity. However, might as well use it as a tool if we can. So utilizing the Disability Act effectively. I'm not quite sure this is pertaining to Ontario because Disability Act is provincially run under the Human Rights Code. So there's the Ontario Human Rights Code, there's Manitoba Human Rights Code, so on and so forth, as there's 10 provinces and 3 territories in Canada. So 3 examples of how you can utilize, or whomever may be affected can utilize, the Disability Act effectively. If you have something similar in America or within the state or whichever level of government controls that aspect. I guess the state's version would be the Bill of Rights. So 3 examples. You can effectively utilize disability to environmental sensitivities. So if you're finding that within your workplace there are pretty strong smells, or if there's, you know, particular lighting that's causing discomfort, or even if there's sounds that's causing discomfort. So for instance, if you find that, you know, for some reason they're within a medical center, as an example, they're playing, you know, 90s or early 2000s so-called gangster rap within the establishment, which seems to have a racist tinge because they don't seem to be playing any other types of music and they only seem to play it when you're there, then you can actually justifiably claim that you have an environmental sensitivity to the noise. And the employer will have a duty to accommodate. So that's just one example. An example, say, for mental health is, again, where personal space can be used. When your personal space is being violated, you can justify requiring accommodation. So if you look at, for instance, the letter again, where the person who wrote in said that there's a male coworker that has been sneaking up on her and making sexually inappropriate comments. She could also add, not only with the sexual harassment, but she can also add to creating a toxic workplace, which is affecting mental health as well. Each time that this person is coming up close to her and sneaking up behind her, then this is toxic behavior that can trigger stress and anxiety. Since stress and anxiety is under mental health, which is protected under the Disability Act or a version thereof, then the employer must again accommodate to ensure that the workplace is safe for all employees. It also goes under harassment as well. So there's many policies that you can use for when your boundaries with personal space is being violated. And then the last part is the substance abuse piece under disability. So I've noticed there's been individuals who have been fired for not passing the drug test, as an example. So the employer cannot just automatically fire those who are afflicted with substance abuse, because substance abuse technically is a disability. So for instance, in Toronto, one of the newspapers had did an expose about 3 years ago about some of the police, municipality police's, police officers who were charged with DUI, but were able to still retain their jobs. How were they able to retain their jobs still? They claimed disability for substance abuse, which in that case would have been alcohol or some other form of chemically mind-altering substance. So in that case, under their union, the employee or employer has a duty to accommodate, which is to provide resources and as well as services that will help that individual become a functional employee. How does this help the Black community in particular? Well, because there's many employees who are non-white in particular who have been unjustly fired without accommodation from the employer, this can justify a lawsuit against the employer not fulfilling their portion of protecting those who are under the disabled class. So basically, they're protected for those who are afflicted by substance abuse. Which brings me to this question. Since there are many meth users that are getting help these days, can a class action suit be brought against the government and its departments? And this would be with respect to North America, such as US, Canada, or the UK or others, along with media and private corporations for failure to accommodate those afflicted during the crack epidemic and other types of drug usage. And the reason I bring this up is because those who were during that time and even to now who are being placed into greater confinement for nonviolent drug charges, they're being branded as criminals. But because it's a substance abuse that they're afflicted by, technically they're disabled. So when they're coming out of the greater confinement, oftentimes the situation is that they cannot find a job due to these criminal charges and the serving of time within prisons or jails. So coming under the brand of disability, maybe one of the ways that can be used is that if employers are continuing not to employ those afflicted by substance abuse, then I'm wondering if they can charge the employers with discrimination or because of the fact that they're under a protected class, which means that they would actually be disabled. So despite the fact that law was broken, because substance abuse is under the disability, at least for Ontario, and other provinces within Canada, then and maybe comparable with the states under the Bill of Rights, wondering if those coming out of greater confinement can still be able to be protected under there and get the employment they need so that they're not re-entering into that situation. So I was just curious to see if that is a possibility, as well as compensation to those who are also afflicted by the substance abuse and where lies were spread about even their children, such as the crack baby slogan that was prominent throughout the 90s. So I hope I didn't, I know it was a lot of things that I just mentioned, but let me know if I need to clarify if anything. Thank you so much and have a wonderful evening.
For sure. I had a wanted to check in with some of the other folks, but I did have a question for B about, I think it was some weeks back, might have even been a couple months back, we played a segment where Desmond Cole was talking about Black Toronto workers, speaking of federal workers, Black Toronto workers being abused. And I just had a quick question, but I'll check in with some of the other folks first. I did not think you were unclear with your commentary. I totally agree with checking the abuse immediately and checking with policy and procedure. I think with the class action lawsuit, for that being one of the things that you used to justify not hiring Black people, them having some sort of criminal history or even prison history as a result of substance abuse issues, I could see, I just think it would be such a massive difference. I mean, you already see it in terms of how whites are responding to the so-called opioid epidemic. It's very difficult for me to see where white people would not just acknowledge, like, oh yeah, we should have offered assistance and treated this as a public health crisis, as opposed to, you know, lock them up and throw away the key and, you know, three strikes and all of that, you know, draconian prison sentencing, that we shouldn't have done that. Oh, it's so wrong. But, you know, where are we going to pay? We got spiraling deficit and the government shut down. I mean, I could not, it'd be very difficult for me to see them compensating Black people financially. Even the employment, because I think a lot of employers, they would probably give a lot of justifications. Like, well, you know, it was a lot of factors and it wasn't just their prison record. Like, they might even wheel out, like, you know, we have employees with us who have prison records. So it was a lot of factors in why we didn't hire, you know, Jamal, other than prison time for, you know, drug use or what have you. So it just seems to me it would be difficult. I don't see white people doing the right thing in that regard, but could be other folks can share their thoughts on that, if that might be an avenue or how we think whites might respond to that. Other folks who dialed in, if you want to respond to any of the questions that have been posed, or if you have your own situation, proceed.
May I be heard?
Can I be heard?
Heard both of you. Let's get our female caller first.
Hi, may I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Faith. I'm from New York, and I'm a big-time listener of the show. And I'm been a spectator for a long time, so I decided to call in tonight. I'm an early childhood teacher in New York, and I've been listening to the show and regarding the young man in Connecticut who was having a hard time passing the teacher certification exam. I called to give a little advice regarding that.
Oh, that's wonderful. Let's hear it. Hope he's listening.
Oh, yeah. In the state of New York, I've had some challenges as a Black female getting certified as an early childhood teacher. The requirements keep changing. And while I was enrolled in college, clearly they had a notice stating that there's a class action lawsuit against Black and Hispanic teachers in New York State regarding the teacher certification exams, and I was surprised at that time. And at the time, I didn't have as much knowledge as I have now as regarding white supremacy. I just find it amazing, and I had hard times as well passing the exams. But my best advice is on the application, when I do apply for it, I may put white female, or I may not identify myself at all by race. Because they do ask you on the application when you register for the exam. And I've noticed that I passed them. It probably has taken me maybe twice. And in the state of New York, you're required to take three exams plus an unpaid internship. I've also, now that I am a certified teacher, I do recognize racism and white supremacy in the field. I've worked with white children, and currently right now I work with Black children. And my current situation right now, working with Black children and working with Black families, I notice the disparity in supplies and funding and how they're really big on celebrating holidays, or we call it quote-unquote horror days, which I don't celebrate. So my advice also is that with that, I just go on vacation during that time. I totally remove myself. And as I learned listening to the show, that I just say that this is the children's classroom. They could have way at it. You want to decorate, you want to put a Christmas tree. The parents are heavily involved. That's a requirement for them. But I just let them have at it, and I just go on vacation. Yeah, that's it for now.
Awesome. Thank you so much for not being a spectator in 2019. Female caller in New York, first time calling in. Thank you so much. And with excellent recommendations. In fact, I checked the New York Post. This is from September 2018. City may have to pay it, may have to pay out $1.7 billion over biased teaching exam. I'm not going to read the whole report, but it reads taxpayers shelled out $98 million over a discriminatory Fire Department of New York screening test just over 4 years ago. But that's pocket change compared to the $1.7 billion the city may now have to pay out over a biased teaching exam. They didn't say racist. The Post has learned legal papers quietly filed over the summer reveal that a court-appointed special master has recommended paying a total of $91.6 million in damages to just 219 of the plaintiffs in a long-running class action suit against the former Board of Education, now the Department of Education, over a racially biased certification exam. Approximately 4,000 people are eligible for payments, according to the court documents. So if the remaining recommendations follow suit, the final bill would be around $1.67 billion. The potential tab is more than five times larger than the $300 million officials were anticipating in 2015 when the Post obtained budget documents warning of the grave physical threat it posed. Let's see. That's an average of...
Yes.
That's, well, I'm just going to give one more detail. That's an average of $65,000 for each of the 1,500. Oh, that's the file. A spokesperson told Mayor de Blasio that the Post spokeswoman for Mayor de Blasio told the Post the city is trying to negotiate a teacher suit settlement. We will budget for this at the appropriate time and we'll remain aggressive in ensuring the plaintiffs and taxpayers are treated fairly during this process. City Law Department spokesman Nicholas Pelucci warned that checks won't go out anytime soon unless the case settles. If we are unable to settle, it will be many years before any money is paid to the plaintiffs. The teacher's case involves the liberal arts and sciences test, a state-mandated exam that city educators and job applicants were required to take from 1993 to 2004. More than 90% of white test takers passed the 80-question multiple-choice quiz, one version of which asked teachers to explain the meaning of a painting by pop artist Andy Warhol. But black applicants scored passing grades only between 51 and 62% of the time, and Latinos had an even lower passing rate, just 47 to 55% of the time. The failures resulted in full-time teachers getting demoted to substitutes and prevented aspiring educators from getting hired. And I will hush there. Were you going to add anything, ma'am?
Yes, actually, the test you just mentioned, every 5 years, the Board of Regents here in New York, they modify and they change the exams. And I noticed the discrimination within that because they'll change it up and then they'll have a safety net. So that particular exam that you're talking about, no one in my school was passing the exam. It had nothing related to teaching. It was very boring, the reading passages and the multiple choice. And so what they did was they threw it away once they revised all the exams. And sometimes I would wait to take the exam over because I knew the state would say, okay, those exams are no good. No one's passing it. I'm assuming that those were white individuals who weren't passing it. So they said, okay, we're going to revise it and make new exams. And they really don't have much to do with teaching, which is really horrible. And they're not refunding you your money as well. So they'll throw it out. They'll say, you have to take a new test that we created. But we won't refund you your money. And you have to pay. So I'm doing a little research online, and I noticed that the schools, I went to a city college, so they get, I guess, vouchers for these exams, but I had to go online to find that out. So the next day, I went to school into the teacher certification office, and I said, hey, I've been doing some research. I understand that you have vouchers. Yeah, but they come on a first-served basis. I said, well, put me down on the list right now. Because and they're like, I would say between $65 and $300 a piece. So, and also the city schools here in New York, I don't know about Connecticut that well, they have statistics based on who passed these exams. So particular schools, like the school I attended, they had a 100% passing rate. So the gentleman from Connecticut, maybe, unfortunately, if he has to re-enroll, maybe he wants to go to a different type of program, check out, do some research on another school, and see, because I guess if you're passing, it looks good for the school. So they really, really work with you. But again, he also has another layer of white supremacy against him because he is a male in a female-dominated industry. And also in this field, I've been told, I'm in early childhood, so I've been told, oh, we don't hire males. And I'm like, what? I think men are the best teachers, you know. They do that because they really love children. Oh, the parents don't feel right, you know. So that's another also bias he has that I, you know, I'm kind of limited out on. But I end there.
Much obliged. Thank you. First time caller in New York. Incidentally, when I was searching, and I'll post that report about the class action lawsuit for the New York teachers. When I was searching for that, the first thing that popped up was a white female teacher has filed a class action lawsuit for $1 billion because she was fired for making black students play slaves in a class play. That's the first thing that popped up when I searched for this New York situation, but that is neither here nor there. Incidentally, TSA, I got the report because I said I think a lot of black people work for TSA. This is from TSA's own website, tsa.gov. They were recognized for excellence in diversity in 2011. It reports that as of the end of 2011, the TSA workforce is made up of 21% African Americans, which is a bit over what the black population is in the United States. So as I thought, a pretty robust number of black people, and it might have gone up since 2011, I don't know. But for it to be even around there, I would suspect this is impacting a lot of non-white people. Let's get retired firefighter. Thank you for being patient, sir. Did you have commentary?
Greetings. Speaking of education, I'm going to make a employment report from Florida. The newly elected governor of the state of Florida, Mr. DeSantis, has been in the process of firing people. This particular case is the first what they call a suspension. The enforcement official, technically sheriff of Broward County, and in turn he replaced this individual with a black male. And it's another quote-unquote first black male to be appointed sheriff of Broward County, whatever that means, as far as the title is concerned, achievement is concerned. Seems to be quite accoladed as far as the article that I've read on him, degreed, and he also owns a business with his wife, who I suspect is a white female. I can't say for sure. I am actually going far out to declare that she may be a white female. Her first name is Holly. I don't know any black females. I know there are some, but I don't know any of very few that first name is Holly. But nevertheless, and the main target is to now go after the superintendent of Broward County Public Schools, which is a black male, Robert Runcie. They said that publicly today in the news. So I'm pretty sure he's going to be very soon is going to be on that on that list of being fired, losing his job. And I can save it for tomorrow, but to let know that this guy is actually, meaning the white male racial suspect governor, also has pardoned the Groveland Four, which is something that I can, you know, you can do your research and report that tomorrow, actually, and what he did. But mainly I was talking about the idea of him replacing police sheriff with a black male, and in turn the governor will be going after a black male that is the superintendent of the Broward County Public Schools. And that's my report for right now. As far as one of the questions, I think you mentioned something about talking about religion on the job.
Well, it was the person wrote in. They said they were, I guess, having some sort of religious ceremonies on the job, and as opposed to just saying, I don't, you know, participate in any religious activities.
Oh.
They were just going ahead and participating. They were just going along to get along, as they say. And so their question was, should they have just said, I don't do this from the beginning, or how would have been the better way to handle it?
Being that I know your rules on your program, I would just say, heck no. to any type of participation in something like that. And if they ask me what my religion is, I would say in a facetious way, justice. That's my religion. You know, and they probably would leave me alone from there forever when it comes to religion or any type of religious ceremony. Anything. Talking about bowing your head and closing your eyes and some white person or even a non-white person saying something, you know, under those type of circumstances, especially the ones that I was in for 28 and a half years, no way, as far as that concern. It would be quite ready to inform anybody of that. Because that's what myself and Mr. Clark and a few others was doing since the time we were working on that job, is to speak directly. And I would state this to any and everybody that's on this line, because a lot of the people that's on this line is still employed, and they're, of course, much younger than I am. You have to speak directly to certain subjects like that one, any type of touching or anything like that. You have to. I know a lot of people are shy. Believe it or not, the retired firefighter is kind of shy, and those sort of things. But you literally have to just, if you have to train yourself to be able to do that, practice it, whatever, what you're going to say and what you're going to do. But you're going to have to speak directly to a lot of that BS that goes on in employment. because they know exactly, white people know exactly what they're doing. They know that it's a means to aggravate you, to upset you, to even have, like I think I heard one of the callers say earlier, have you upset from a psychological standpoint where the actions would follow you off the job, and now you would bring that pestilence into your home, into your private life, maybe around your children, whatever marital situation you're in, you know, and they understand it. They understand it. They definitely understand on what they're doing. And so you have to fight back in that way by developing some strict codification on what you're going to say and say it immediately. And I'll just listen and participate a little bit more on the program. Thank you.
Context of white supremacy. Oh, wait a second. Before you, it's retired firefighter. So before you retired, they didn't have any prayer time on the fire department. Like, you know, let's get together, white Jesus, keep us from, you know, burning to a crisp. Y'all didn't have to do that in all that time.
I actually had a white minister that I worked with directly. He was the driver before he retired. One like Malcolm X said, an old white preacher. One thing that I did kind of admire about him, that he did not, through his preaching, wasn't employed as far as getting funds. Not that I know of now, you know, white people do lie. But nevertheless, he wasn't in that type of situation where he actually got his employment from. Is that one of the things that is what nobody likes to do on the fire department is change out trucks. You know, trucks break down, you know, something, equipment on the truck may break down. Or the fire truck or whatever. So what normally takes place is one shift will put it off on the other shift, you know, as far as that concerned. So anyway, it fell on our shift this particular point in time. So we go out at a particular point in the day where just about everybody is off, you know, off down at the main headquarters where next door is where you change out the trucks. And the truck was waiting there. And a couple of the whole crew went down, which normally it doesn't take the whole crew, but we all of us went down. And so the other two guys out of the four, the other two guys went about to go get the truck that we were going to exchange with. So myself and this white male, elderly white male minister, firefighter was there by ourselves, and I could just feel he was itching to say something to me. And so I was prepared for him, because I know what he does. He would walk around, you know, and have this like joking type of attitude, and every now and then, you know, he would say something that has something to do with religion. I would hear, but I wouldn't respond to it at all. He's not talking to me. So he came to me and with this traditional invite that quote unquote Christians do. Do you know on what would take place with you if you died, and are you all right with God? So something like that. And I was ready for him. I said, look here. The first person you need to do is take that to some white people. And you take that to white people, and if they stop practicing racism, then you can come to me with that. And I didn't get any response from him at all. He walked off. And he never came to me about religion or the subject, none whatsoever. And I guess maybe a half a year, a year or so after he retired from the job. But that's the closest story I can remember, you know, as far as what I've been directly faced with as far as the subject of religion and an employee, you know, on the job. And that's my story.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. The religion of white supremacy. Great response. And you can, I was thinking, Emmy, she said, you know, hey, I don't discuss politics on the job, and leave it at that. You can just add religion if you just want to give them the one sentence. I don't discuss religion on the job, or make it a conjunction. I don't discuss religion or politics on the job, and leave it at that. And I cannot imagine a circumstance where, as a part of your job, you're going to be required to discuss religion, or unless, you know, you're in the seminary or something like that. But I mean, that should be enough. Just saying, just say that up front, and then just stick to it. If they try to, oh, come on, you know, just tell us, what do you think? I don't discuss politics or religion on the job. Thank you kindly. And then keep it pushing. If you need to go to the restroom or whatever, keep it, start to move your feet at that point, if they, you know, continue to press you. Number again, 641. When I say move your feet, walk. That means you need to go to the bathroom or walk to another area, go outside, whatever you need to do, but keep it moving. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks we have missed, if you have commentary to share, line should be open. Proceed. While we're waiting for folks to get their commentary together, shouldn't be any spectating, even in 2019, for workplace racism. I cannot believe we don't have anybody who has not having any impact from the so-called shutdown or whites being white in your workplace. However, as I said, we had our female victim who wrote in. She did several parts, so at least while you all are hanging out, I can read some of the other comments. Second email she wrote in. White women. There's a white female in the department from Alabama who is very open about the many low achievers she dated. Cowbell. She would bring them to the job to be introduced to us. Sorry. Most of the time she dated bald white men, but once she dated a Mexican male. One day she came back to my desk and told me how drunk she had gotten the night before. She described how she went to the bathroom to vomit and he followed her so that he could help her. When he tried to hold her hair for her, she said to him, "Get your hands off me, you effing beaner." She laughed ferociously after finishing her story. I replied, "That's not nice." And she said, still laughing, "Oh, it was just a joke." I apologized to him after. I just said, "Okay." It was later revealed that she is a staunch supporter of President Trump. Most white women are, 52%. I don't think I responded correctly. How should I have responded to her racist comment? Before I get to a possible response, the word beaner became controversial this week for the New York Times. They had a crossword puzzle where apparently beaner was the word that you were supposed to find in the crossword puzzle. And then they had to come out. This is the New York Times. They had to come out and issue a tacky apology. And oh, man, I can't believe we had beaner in the crossword puzzle. I'm glad nigger wasn't there, nor was spear chucker, but we did miss one. Beaner did slip in super, super bad on our. We made a mistake, our fault, and we won't do it again. This came out on multiple outlets and what have you. I think this was like last week in the Times, and then the fallout continued to this week and they gave their apology. But that's one. How you respond, I think this came up before where we've had listeners and we've talked about this where whites on the job, this is a part of the delectable Negro and the consumption of black people, where they just think that they can talk to you about any sort of tackiness, where they can go into their sexual depravity and tell you about who they're having sexual intercourse with and breaking up with this person. We've had some people mentioned stories like this before, I would give them the halt. Like as soon as this, because I've said before, we should only be talking about workplace related things. As soon as it veers off into who I'm dating and how drunk I got, like, whoa, 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 pause. This sounds like it is veering into the, what is it? NSFW, not suitable for work region. I'm going to get back to my work. I'm sure you had a blast and, you know, you can share the details, you know, down the road. Maybe if we bump into each other away from work, which will never happen. But I would halt. And the same thing, if they insist, because sometimes they will, I would get up and just go to the restroom or whatever you need to do to get away from that person. But I would just stop and I would have that as a pattern that I'm not someone that you're going to come and hold hostage and think that you're going to tell me all about your tacky and trifling ways and what your antics when you're not on the job. I would just make that clear. And I think some of that is the energy and how you carry yourself, being serious. I've talked before about not participating in gossip on the job. This is totally different. I've said before, you're not on the job to be aloof. In my view, it's totally different if they come up and are just, oh, how was your weekend? Oh, had a good time, hung out with, this is what they're saying to you. Hung out with the family, you know, we did this, child had a birthday, but that's totally different. Them asking that sort of question and you just casually entertain, okay, Whitey, hurry up and finish it. All right, we'll see you in line. That's totally different from them coming up and, oh yeah, we got so raunchy and I was drunk last night. Whoa. Not suitable for work. Thank you kindly. I have things to do. I will check in with you down the road. Thank you kindly and keep it pushing. That's the way I would handle that one. Next, during the last year of employment at this job, I began to have a better understanding of white supremacy and thus began to be more serious about ending it. Non-white people were being murdered and no one in that office ever seemed disturbed or concerned, and I knew I had to do something different. I began reducing my dialogue with white people to a simple greeting instead of extensive phony pleasantries. I didn't participate in potlucks, and I finally had the courage to say, I don't celebrate it around holidays. Is there a better way to respond when asked to participate in holiday events, games at work? I think being direct, retired firefighter just said it. I think there's no need to do a lot of hemming and hawing. I think it's always best if you can, you know, get that started from the very beginning. So then it's not that you participated in one or two and then are having to change it around. Just be direct. I don't participate in all that. Don't make a big deal about it. That way it doesn't have to be a protest and all that. Just I don't participate, you know, in holidays. I didn't grow up celebrating them. The potlucks. I got gluten allergies. I'm on the keto diet, you know, easy one. Peanut allergies and whatever else, you know, vegan. Yeah, I got real food sensitivities. My stomach, I just can't do that. And leave it alone there too. I wouldn't invest a whole lot of time and energy. I would just be consistent so that they know every time. And that's another one. Keep it moving. I wouldn't have a whole lot to say. I wouldn't have a prepared speech. It would be one sentence. I don't participate. And keep it moving on to the next topic so that they don't even get the impression that you might, you know, be agreeable. Or maybe they can wear you down. It's not even up for discussion. Let's see. Other folks dialed in if you have commentary to share, responses to any of the questions, or if you have your own commentary that you would like to share, feel free.
Gus, I got a quick question.
Uh-oh, let's hear it.
What's a beaner? What's a beaner?
It is a white supremacist slur, as they say, that is used generally when describing individuals, so-called Latinos, non-white people that would be classified as what they say, Latino or Hispanic, non-white people. I think the word beaner used. I think sometimes there's a racist association that these people eat a lot of beans. So that'll be one of the racist slurs that is used to describe so-called Latinos, beaner.
Interesting. I've heard of a beanie, which is a small cap that some people wear on their heads back years ago to indicate they were freshmen. But haven't heard of the word. Thank you.
Yes, sir. New York Times got in trouble for it this week. You can Google it and learn all about what beaner is and why they, you know, claim they shouldn't have said it and they're real sorry about it. And you can even read what was the clue for that word beaner, because it seems people figured it out. They filled it in for the crossword puzzle, white people in words. What was the clue for the word beaner? That, in fact, I'll do that before we go off the air, see what their clue was for the term. Let's see. Other folks dialed in with a hand up commentary.
Hello, ma'am. Be heard.
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening, everybody, and good evening, Gus. Since you mentioned beaner, what I notice teaching now is that a lot of the schools are incorporating immersion classes, where there will be quote-unquote Hispanic non-white kids with other kids that would be considered white, or maybe a few considered non-white Black. So that way the children start learning Spanish from a very, very early age and become fluent by the time they get to like fifth and sixth grade. So it's really funny to me that that lady, you know, said that that man was a beaner, but white people are recognizing the need to learn Spanish because of the growing number of Mexicans and other Spanish-speaking people in the nation, and they're adamant about not being left out and not knowing what you know, non-white people are saying in all terms and conditions. And I'll mute my line. Thank you.
For sure, for sure. The report, this is from ABC News. Will Shortz, the crossword editor for the New York Times, who also he does white people in words. They have word games all the time. They have on NPR. I'll play it tomorrow for the compensatory call in, but they have the Sunday puzzle. And Will Shortz, this white man, does it for NPR. So it's every Sunday. 2 days it'll be on. And so before they even got to the puzzle, he had to come in and do his tacky apology for the racist comment in the New York Times from the week preceding. So the crossword editor for the New York Times issued an apology after readers brought it to his attention that a racial slur was used in the New Year's Day edition of the crossword puzzle. In the Tuesday, January 1 edition of the crossword, the answer to the clue in the two down slot was beaner. This is a racial slur used for Mexicans and people of Mexican descent. The definition is the first result to appear in Google when searching the term. The clue to two down in Tuesday's puzzle was pitched to the head informally. Neither Joel Fagliano, F-A-G-L-I-A-N-O, nor I had ever heard the slur before. I do not believe that, and I don't know anyone who would use it. I don't believe that either. The response from Shortz reads, maybe we lived in rarefied circles. I do not believe that. You write for the New York Times and you do not know the term beaner as a racial slur? I do not believe you. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary, you would, and you do the Sunday puzzle. It's not just that you're a white man in a system of white supremacy where whites can't be ignorant about racism. You have a unique skill with words, enough that you do the crossword puzzle for the New York Times, where lots and lots and lots of people all over the world do the crossword puzzle in the New York Times. You have a refined skill set with words. I do not believe you don't know that beaner is a racist, white supremacist slur. Deception. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary.
Hi, Gus.
Be in Toronto.
Yes, I had a quick question in reference to the first letter that you had read at the start of the program. For the government shutdown, with the government or department's failure to pay their employees, I'm just surprised that the unions for those employees are not crying breach of contract. Or is that simply information that just hasn't been passed through the media, because I haven't heard anything about it so far in the Canadian media in reference to the government shutdown, because technically, you know, that would be a breach of contract if they're purposely delaying pay to the employees. I'm sure that there's something that can be
be said for that. In terms of the contract workers, it may be a little harder, but I'm just wondering, is there anything from the unions?
Oh, no problem. As you said, I think for the contract workers, I don't think they would have that option for folks who are full-time, fully directly employed by the federal government. I believe I have seen reports where some of them are talking about lawsuits and what have you to stop this, but I have not. The major thrust of it, of the reporting that I've heard around that, has not been about breach of contract. I think today they said that Congress passed the law and President Trump is supposed to sign that they are supposed to agree to pay all of the workers who've been furloughed and not paid, and including back pay. So it looks like, you know, all these folks should get what they are owed at some point. Not that that makes it any better, but yeah, that has not been the major thrust of the reporting that I've seen in the States either, about breach of contract or, you know, this is not supposed to be happening. Most of it's just been frustration and there's nothing we can do about this.
Yes. Cause it's just highly unusual. I'm just wondering, like, what executive powers does Trump have in order to be able to do this? Like, it's really criminal.
They could be going to court. I have seen a few of those in terms of some folks saying that they would be willing to go to court, but that's, you know, going to take quite a bit of time. And again, that wouldn't be an immediate remedy. Just like we say for workplace racism in general, that's not going to be an immediate solution. If you have to go the court route, that could take a long, long, long time. So, and you wouldn't be getting paid in the meantime either. So that's part of the system of racism, white supremacy.
Gus, may I respond to that?
Oh, let's hear it. Yes, ma'am.
I apologize. Were you about to speak, ma'am?
Oh, no, I was just saying thank you.
No problem. So I used to be a state employee, and there are certain things in our contract that said if there were certain conditions, like budget impasses, et cetera, that certain employees would have to work furlough, except for what they would consider essential services, fire, police, corrections, Department of Corrections, and health and human services, which I fell under, so a furlough wouldn't have affected me. So I'm imagining that the same thing applies with federal employees. I do know for a fact, because I'm a veteran, that the VA is unaffected. So veterans will be getting what they normally expect for, like, retirement and services, et cetera. And, like, the military, obviously, is still getting paid, Department of Defense. So there are people being paid, other people that are considered non-essential, and very well maybe in a contract saying you have to work furlough until further notice. And because it's an exacerbated amount of time, yeah, I would think people would start to take legal action, because they could say, you know, there's a certain amount of unreasonability or whatever for them to continue without pay. But essentially, that's where I would, my educated guess begins.
Thank you so much, because, you know, it's definitely undue hardship, you know, that's being caused by this. So thank you so much, Miss.
Oh, wow. they have an article in The Atlantic, why federal workers still have to show up even if they're not being paid. The law prohibits public employees from striking, forcing them into what one union leader called involuntary servitude during the government shutdown. And the photograph that they have up, TSA workers featuring a non-white male again. More than 20% of TSA employees are Negros. But yes, it seems like white people have that all the way, either in the contract and or in law, that they are not allowed to strike or whatever other restrictions they have. If there happens to be it seems like whites know this is going to happen. Like this happened in 2013, and I forgot the other time that it happened some years previously, but it seems like they know this is a tactic that we use sometimes in the system. So this might happen, you know, every 10 to 15 years. So we already got our code for that. If it does happen, everybody, you still got to show up for work and you can't take off. And, you know, they already seem like they have an extensive code for this.
Thank you so much, Gus. It's pretty interesting. Like, wow.
Yeah, it says, I'm not reading the whole article. It's lengthy. If I'll post it if folks want to get more details. It says, but since the enactment of the Taft-Hartley Act in 1947, federal employees have been legally prohibited from striking. That law was intended to prevent public sector workers from leveraging a work stoppage that could cripple the U.S. government or major industries in negotiations for better pay, working conditions, or benefits. But it likely did not envision a scenario where the government would require its employees to work without paying them, as is the case now. For hundreds of thousands of federal employees, the involuntary servitude that Young describes could continue indefinitely. President Trump warned Democratic leaders last week that he could keep the government shuttered for months or even years, a scenario that union leaders told me they had never before contemplated. A lot of things are possible under this president, so I think we have to start preparing. And I'll stop there. But yes, it looks like, as I said, this is already in law that they have this. So yeah, that's why I think a lot of people are sounding so frustrated and all of this, not to mention that this could go on for years, as he said.
That's just, it's really bizarre that he would choose to do this. You know, this is, wow. Thank you once again, Gus.
Indeed. System of racism, white supremacy. That, and again, it's important for so many reasons. It could be a great lesson, regardless of what your job is, because I know they have to. It's not just black people at TSA. I know it's probably black people that are, quote unquote, entrepreneurs, self-employed, but they are being impacted by this. That's why I say you can never really get in that position in the system of white supremacy where you forget this is where we are, because these sort of things happen all the time. And especially sometimes they happen on an acute level where it's just impacting one black person or that particular household of black people. This is on a broader scale, but these sort of things are supposed to happen in a system of racism, white supremacy. And this is directly racism. All of this, again, we got these raping beaners. We got these raping beaners coming over the border. All of this is directly racism, white supremacy. Other folks who dialed in, if you
can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. I was going to also mention that more. I'm just thinking that the races have already factored in the white loss that may take place during this period of point in time. They normally do consider the loss that white people will have. But I do notice the whites that I saw that are affected by this, that being interviewed, they mention, number one, that they are for the wall. They've interviewed a couple of white people that say, well, I'm for the wall, but they are uncomfortable in the position that they're in. But while they're stating that, they're smiling. They're smiling, which is not unusual in my view with white people. And so basically what I'm saying is that the white people that are in power, they basically have considered the loss that's going to take place out of white people. And they're going to just continue to move forward with this. Thank you.
NPR did a report. I just wanted to say real quick, NPR did a report. I believe it was earlier today or earlier within the last 24 hours. And they were talking about the shutdown. And they said, they asked, well, you know, is this hurting President Trump, you know, people feel like he's most to blame, which they said most people that they interviewed think he's most to blame. But they said that the they're going out and talking to his supporters and what have you, even the ones that are frustrated about the shutdown. And many of them, his supporters, they say, hey, we want that wall. We got these beaners. That is a concern. These beaners are a problem. We want that wall. That's what they said. So, again, system of racism, white supremacy. And even before I get Thomas in New York, that's who I thought I heard. I thought I heard them say that because of employees, because they said a lot of people, a lot of TSA workers and other airport workers that are not being paid, they're calling out sick and not showing up to work, and that this is causing enough of a delay, this disruption, that they're starting to have closures at major airports. I thought I heard them say that Miami Airport is going to be closed over the weekend. Now, imagine that. Closed, and you don't think that's going to have a huge impact on a whole lot of non-white people who are missing a weekend, or I don't know if it's both Saturday and Sunday, but matter of fact, we have multiple callers in Florida. We'll check in with them. Before I get Thomas in New York, real quick, retired firefighter, were you aware that Miami Airport is supposed to be closed tomorrow?
No, sir. I was not aware of it. Wasn't aware of it. I normally watch the 11 o'clock news, and it's, of course, it's not on yet in this part of the world. So it may come on during that time when I tune into and after your program is over with, but I haven't heard it. No, I'm not surprised though.
No. Thomas in New York, much obliged. That was you. Much obliged for your patience. Did you have commentary, sir?
Yeah. Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all the folks. You know, this is the most ridiculous thing, this shutdown over the wall. Because the man said he wanted to build a wall the whole 2 years he campaigned. I mean, I don't understand what the problem is. Just give him his doggone wall. I mean, simple as that to me. Give every other president what they want. Give him what he wants. $5 billion to the United States, please. Hey, you know, that's nothing. Give him the wall. The French lady, she calls my terrorist the storm. So every morning when I, you know, walk past her desk, she says, how's the weather today? In like a little joking manner. Yeah. So she got yelled at by my terrorist for complaining about the garbage can. She wanted me to take, you know, she said, Thomas, get over here. So I go to her desk, go around this office, get everyone's garbage cans. Under no circumstances do you have to give it, let them keep it. I want all the garbage cans. I'm not keen to have garbage picked up under their desk. So I said, no problem. So I went and got all the garbage cans. I said, what you want me to do with them? Throw them in the garbage. I said, no problem. So I threw them in the garbage. So, of course, this French lady complained. So she got yelled at for complaining, you know. And either way, she started calling my terrorist Stormy Daniels. And I thought that was very interesting. So, of course, I don't. And she says this, I stone face, like, I don't understand, you know, and she explains the joke all the time. I'm like, okay, but, you know, I don't trust her. I go along with it. One day they're friends, and, you know, I used to call you the storm, and Thomas, you know, nah. So the French lady, she starts looking through, I see her walking around the office looking through drawers and file cabinets, and including, just came up behind me, went through the drawers and file cabinets that's been allocated to me and my workspace that's been allocated to me. And I didn't even ask any questions because it ain't my stuff. So I heard her mention to other people who said, what are you, you know, looking through my stuff for? Oh, I'm looking for a missing box. And they might have said, it's not in my drawers, you know, get out of here. But like I said, I don't call anything in the office mine. So she comes to me and asks me, and confidence to look for this box of files. You know, she said, you know, it's very important, and I know they're here because I packed them, and, you know, please look for them. So I said, okay. So, you know, a couple days, you know, as I went around the office, I was looking, here he is. I didn't see this box of files, you know. I had pretty much unpacked everything weeks ago. So I didn't find them. So she asked me again, say, listen, I looked everywhere almost, you know, I couldn't find them. I said, the only place I didn't look is the IT room, but they don't keep any boxes in there. That's all the servers and things. So she asked if I could look in there. I said, well, I have to, you know, wait for one of those guys to come over there, and, you know, I don't have access to that room. So once, you know, the guy came over, I asked him, is there a box in there? He said, no. So that was all I needed to hear. So I said, I told her, look, I look everywhere, there's nothing. So she says her partner comes back tomorrow, and she needs this box of files. This is all his permanent client files from, like, J through Z or whatever, you know. So either way, you know, I said, well, man, I hope you find him, you know. So then she comes over to me and says, listen, Thomas, you know, we lost these files, and we're going to have to explain. So I'm thinking we, you know, because I remembered when we were in the other office that you might have brought these files over to me, and maybe I said, you said you packed them, right? I said, yeah. I said, okay, no problem. That's what I needed her to say. So I went to my desk, pulled up my Outlook. Now, remember, I was doing all this in confidence, and I wasn't trying to get her in trouble. So I said, sent a nice little email. So I said, as per your request, I looked at every file cabinet, office, storage closet, and the IT room for the box of files that belong to Blink that you said you could not locate. I have a suggestion. Tomorrow, Blink is going to off-site storage to retrieve files. I am sure if you ask him, give him a description of the missing box and or the contents of the files that are missing, he will be able to see if they were mistakenly sent off-site. Right? And I sent this to her, and I CC'd my terrorist, and I CC'd the guy who was going off-site. So within seconds, like Usain Bolt, she just came running to me, and this was my terrorist. What box of files? I explained exactly what box of files. These are permanent files for such and such. She says, man, this is, you know, he doesn't lose anything. He keeps everything. She's like, oh, my God. You know, how come you didn't tell me anything? I said, oh, you know, she asked me to look for it. She didn't want to make a big deal out of it. She thought I could find it for her. Next time you come straight to me. She goes running like Usain Bolt over to her desk. You can hear her, you know, grilling her about it. And, of course, the French lady was very angry that I mentioned it and sent CC'd her on the email, but I had to cover myself. So later, my terrorist calls me over and says, good job. I hope she can't find them. Anytime she comes to you, you come to me. And she gives me a wink. So I said, okay, and I kept it moving. Same French lady. Like I said, she was kind of angry about the files, and I told her, well, listen, you know, that's my boss, and she would have found out I was doing it anyway. I would have got in trouble, and I got to cover myself, and, you know, so I ran it that way, and she says, I understand, whatever. She comes to me a couple days later, and I'm back to cutting the food again. So I'm in the kitchen, you know, doing my thing, and she comes in there, and I have my headphones on. But she said the magic words. She said, I admire your people. So I said, what? I took my headphones off. Gus, I couldn't make this up. I mean, it was like, man. So I said, what do you mean you admire my people? So she says, I watched the documentary about that man who shot up that church. I said, who, Dylan who? So she says, yes. And your people are so religious and so faithful. They were so sympathetic of him. They forgave him. You know, in France, that would never happen. You know, I just admire, you know, and I can't understand why they treat your people so bad here. So I just said, wow. I said, okay. And so I put my headphones back in at that point. And she kept talking, but I wasn't listening to anything else. That was all. I didn't even have a, I don't even want to give a, you know, a response to that. I just wanted to hear what she was admired black people for. So in the French, they would have their heads, and I'm like, man, y'all are softest people on the planet. But so either way, go on my lunch break on the phone, you know, headphones in, jacket on, you know, ready to go. Take my little break for an hour. Get on the elevator. I hear screaming through the glass door. So I look, you know, and it's my terrorist. Where are you going? I said, I'm going to lunch, my lunchtime. No, you're not. I want you back at that door, at the back door, the freight elevator is coming up. We're getting grills. I said, grills? She says, yes, for the radiators. You're going to put them in later, but you go back there right now and receive them. So I'm like, man, now I'm on the phone while she's talking to me like that, and exactly how I say it is just how she speaks to me. So I go back there, you know, tell my man, oh, listen, man, I'm going to call you back later. He was like, damn, bro, I mean, hey. I said, yeah, you see what I be talking about, right? So I go to the back door, and after 15 minutes waiting, like, where's this guy with these so-called grills? So I go back to the front desk, and I ask the lady who's covering for the receptionist. They had this other lady covering for her. I said, what happened with the grills? And she says, oh, the guy just called and says that he can't find parking at the loading dock. So I said, all right, I'm going to go downstairs. So I go downstairs, and it's freezing. You know, I'm just thinking I'm going to the loading dock to see if it has security. I'm a route form or whatever. But he's parked outside. He's talking about they're not letting him park on the loading dock. So I'm like, yeah, you don't got the right type of vehicle for that. I said, just park where you are. And he's like, nah, I can't do that. So, you know, I'm about to just leave. So I said, I'm looking at this. It's a bugger. And if he leaves, you know, this is $6,000 order. You going to leave? Like, you think you're going to, man, I wasn't doing bright. I said, listen, bro, you put it on the cart, I'll bring it upstairs for you, and I'll bring you your cart back. So he said, bet, no doubt. So he did it. He put it on the cart, and I helped him do it. And I wheeled the cart upstairs. So I'm taking it off of his cart, put it on my cart, and these are heavy radiator grills, like, you know, I'm thinking, what the heck they want me to do with these? I don't know, so I'm putting them on my cart, and everyone's walking past, no one helping me, but they, what are those? You know, everyone, it's like, man, you know, so, I you know, it just pisses me off, because I hate when people ask questions, and what I generally say is, go ask her, and nobody wants to go ask her, like, I don't know, go ask her after a while, because I'm not going to keep explaining it. Like, he wasn't there when I explained it to the last person, you know? So either way, you know, just pissed me off because as I get back from lunch and I start dealing with these grills, I realized that, you know, I need to measure the radiator before I put them on because they're all different sizes and they fit perfectly to the measurements of the offices. So, you know, one office might take three different sizes of these grills. So I'm just trying to measure. So I'm going in there with the right size. I got everything set up and organized. The coworker who's supposed to be helping me, he's sitting there, he's doing work, but he's not paying attention to how I'm doing it. So when I come, you know, at the end of the day, yesterday, I got all the partner offices done except for the owner, because he was in there. And either way, she was very happy with what I had done, you know, and she says, you know, finish up tomorrow. So today came. So I explained to my coworker when I come in. He said, hey, I'm going to start this while you do the food and everything, and I'm going to see you later. So I said, no problem. So I said, listen, this is how you do it. I start setting it up with him. This size here, you see, this is a quarter inch shorter than this size. You know, this isn't going to fit on these grills. You have to measure it first. I took him in the office. I showed him, all right, this is how I measure it. Now we're going to go out here and get exactly those measurements. Bam. Put it on there. It's perfect. You see? Did it. He says, okay, all right, man, no, I don't have to do it that way. I'm going to do it my way. So he just goes in there with the grill, and if it looks like it fits, he puts it there, and it's not fitting perfectly because now we got something that's too big to fit on. He messed up the whole thing. So now Monday, I'm going to have to go behind him and fix everything because she's blaming me for it. And I said, wait a minute, he did it, not me. I was doing my other job. Well, you showed him how to do it. I said, but he didn't do it the way I showed him how to do it. This is your fault. So I have to fix his fault, you know what I'm saying? Sexual degenerate behavior. When I worked at the old office, across the street, I told you, was the other, you know, side where they had human resources and billing. And they also had a gentleman who used to work for the firm, but now he owns his own practice, and it's real small. He only got 3 employees. He moved over with us to the new building. He has, like, the side, little corner of the office that's his. Either way, I still have to, you know, bring him his bill. Like, he's a part, he's paying, I guess, rent or whatever, so he's a part of the firm, even though he's not. Either way, he's sitting right at the corner. So he's looking up at the hotel right next to the office. And he tells me, man, get a seat. So, you know, I grab a seat. I don't know why I'm thinking he wants me to bring him an extra chair or something. He says, sit down, man, look. And he's up there looking at the women getting dressed in the hotel. I'm like, man, you're crazy. You know, I got up, man. But that's what he's sitting there doing. And when I go into the office of the guy who tried to zipper me and measure his windows, and first he's complaining, I don't want no new windowsill. You know, I don't care about that. And I'm like, hey, she told me to do it. I'm doing it. You go call her up if you don't want it. Oh, I'm not calling her. You know, he says, I got something better for you to measure. And I said, hey, man, come on. And he starts laughing. You know, then he gets on the phone with one of his clients. And I mean, he's talking to his client like, you know, you didn't do this like I told you to. And, you know, if you get away, this is your fault. And I mean, he's talking to his client like that. I mean, like, he gets off the phone and he says, you know what I need now? A blonde and a blowjob. And I said, all right, see you later, man. And, you know, that was how that conversation ended. And I'll mute myself for now, Gus. Thank you.
Wow. Context of white supremacy. I would say, number one, I think I forgot the caller who wrote in about the white man sneaking up on her on the job. This happens to males and females. We've had a number of males talk about whites sneaking up on them and trying to scare them on the job for years. Long time pattern. I would encourage any males, females, victims of white supremacy anywhere in the known universe. If you're on a job, once any sort of sexually inappropriate remark or action has occurred, from that point forward, I wouldn't care how long you're there, everything, I would be what they call hypersensitive about any remark, any comment from anybody. Because at that point, I'd be thinking maybe we got a Jerry Sandusky situation here where this is known about and encouraged, or the Catholic Church, or however you need to frame it, where this is an environment where you got lots of sexual predators, where this is tolerated. This is great. We can make these sort of remarks on the job. I'm around, you know, kindred, fellow predators who they understand we have the same sense of sexual deviancy. We enjoy the same types of things. Yeah, let's go hang out and look at them change clothes. Yeah, talking to clients. Yeah, I need a blonde and a blowjob. Yeah, oh, here comes black male. Let me see if I can grab his crotch here. Like, wow, the white woman. How did I forget? Oh, yeah, let me show you my panties. Look. Wow, that's what we got. And these are attorneys, for goodness sake. Once that's been established, like everything, I'm writing them all down. I'm recording everything and I'm being super. Once that the guy that grabbed from my crotch, now he's talking about exactly what he said. Well, all right. I will talk to you later. Good seeing you, John. We'll speak soon. And getting on out of here. Oh, I got something for you to measure. All right. Make sure I get that written down. I might even need to get one of those tap recorders if things are happening that quick. I mean, geez, that is... You got to be very serious about it. And that's why I said earlier, the person that wrote in, you got to cut that stuff at the knees, because if you don't, it will just continue and continue and continue. With the French white woman, before she pulled her pants down to show her panties, she had said, oh, I just love me some Thomas. He's just the best colored boy in the whole universe. She didn't start with undressing. It was a build up to that. If you don't nip that stuff in the bud, it will just continue and continue and continue. And if you're in a work environment, as I said, where you got lots of this happening, I would be writing constantly and I would be on hyper alert for any. I mean, I've had a white man grab my crotch and a white woman show me her derriere almost nude. What could I be faced with on Monday? The all-star, they come out with the we. Now I say, watch the possessive adjective. They come out with the, now, Thomas, we lost these files. We? Like, immediate, that is brilliant counter-racist work. We lost these files? You said you packed the material? Yeah, okay. Ding, and immediately making a record that is brilliant. And I wouldn't even think of it. It's a white person. I wouldn't even think of it as snitching or whatever it is. This is actual fact. And you said protecting yourself. Whites, she was ready to rat and blame Thomas already. We, and that we would have been he. She would have switched that W up real quick. He lost the file. I packed it. He was being reckless. I don't know. You know, these colored fellas, you can't trust them. And then Thomas would have been in there trying to explain what happened to the file. Protect yourself and assume white people are going to be white. They're going to practice racism, white supremacy, and be prepared. Be especially sensitive to anything like that. Document, emphasize that all the time, making an electronic record, and never feel any type of way. I know we talk about not snitching if it's other black people, but never feel any type of way of snitching, ratting, whatever, a suspected racist on the job when they're not doing the correct thing. Never hesitate or feel bad about that at all. They were probably thinking of 20 things to blame on you, you know, just during lunch alone. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary to share, if we have not heard from you, line should be open. Feel free.
Gus, can I add one to that, please?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Right after the incident happened with the email and, you know, the terrorist came over and she ran, you know, I started thinking, let me go to the two non-white administrative assistants. They're not black, but they're not white. So I went to them and explained to them, because she's going to try to attach it on to somebody, you know, so just to give them a heads up that she's, you know, trying to, she's on the hot seat and she might, you know, try to attach them to it. So be preemptive. So they were very thankful that I gave them that heads up, because they, you know, were able to pretty much take some initiative to let people know that they had nothing to do with that, that's high up their partners. So I thought that, you know, that was, even though they weren't black, but, you know, they're not white. So I thought that was pretty good, too. The French lady came up to me today. That is two guys. They used to, the guy who job I took, and he moved up. Him and another guy sat in the office together, and he's Dominican and the other guy's Puerto Rican, and they look nothing alike. You know, he looks like a Dominican, the other guy looks like a Puerto Rican. I mean, you could tell them apart pretty easily in my book, you know, according to me. But either way, she comes up to me today and says, "Now, Thomas," you know, like leans over and whispers, "Now look over there. Who's holding the tape? Is that such and such, or is that such and such? Because I get them mixed up. They look just alike." And I'm looking at them like, how could you get to one has hair like us, the other one has straight hair? I mean, it's pretty obvious, but I'll mute my line. Thank you, Gus.
Difficult time telling apart the colored fellas, so they say. Heard that one many times down through the years. Let's see, two things before I get to the other callers. Be in Toronto. Are you there, ma'am?
Yes, I'm still here.
Grand. So Desmond Cole did that segment where he was talking about racism against black workers in Toronto. And in the report, he indicated that he thought black females were really catching the brunt of it. And you wrote about that report, and you said that you felt it was black males who were really catching it tough in Toronto, black Toronto employees, black males. Why did you think it was the other way, black males who were catching a tougher time?
The reason I mentioned it is because, based on the different assignments that I've been on, mainly in hospitals and schools, even though those are provincially regulated industries, part of the government department, oftentimes I would not see a black male there. I would see one. Now, mind you, this is for the Catholic District School Board now. which is fundamentally different than the regular Toronto District School Board. Just making that differentiation. So there may be slightly more Black males in the public school sector, but in the at least in the Toronto Catholic District School Board, I hardly see any Black males. In fact, I don't see any. plenty of white women, though. Plenty of white men, and maybe a sprinkle of non-white people. And a sprinkle meaning at five or less. And when I was there, because I was representing an agency doing one-to-one support, it would on face value, it would look as if I was a part of the staffing, when in actual fact, I wasn't even a part of it at all. So the amount of non-whites there is even less. But for, in particular, Black males, there was none. Other places that I've gone to, so for instance, some of the triad programs where it's an all-white female front, literally. It was a similar situation. Coming in as contract work, again, anyone walking in, they might think, oh, you know, at least they hired a Black woman. Nope, that wasn't the case at all. it was only an all-white female front that was the full-time staff. I didn't see any Black men there either. So my question is, you know, where are the Black men? And I really feel that they're catching the brunt because I hardly see them anymore being employed in the workplace where you know they can get benefits. There isn't that equal representation for Black men and Black women. Black women tend to be able to find employment easier than Black males. From what I've found in speaking with some of the Black males about this, because I've spoken to friends, family, and acquaintances about this very thing, and you know, some of the feedback that I received is oftentimes they're being told, if they are in the workplace, the few that are in the workplace are being told, well, you know, their voice is intimidating if they can speak in a slightly higher octave. You know, just the height and stature, physical stature of the individual is quote unquote threatening. You know, or there's just no presence at all, and the question's not even asked as to, you know, how can I put this? When I was going on some of my interviews, just to show how bad this can be, you know, I would get, like, all the interviews I went to, I was interviewed by white women. And, you know, while they're asking me about diversity, you know, I'm laughing in the back of my mind of, you know, how are you people expecting me to speak about diversity and the understanding of it when I'm what's mirrored before me are three white women or one white woman or some white woman. There's no Black male in the hiring process. There you hardly see, you know, in a managerial position, the supervisor position, much less even in front line. What I am seeing is more and more Black men in particular becoming homeless. I'm seeing more and more Black men entering into the shelter because either they've lost their jobs or due to precarious work or hard of just finding work or being under underpaid to the point that they're not able to sustain even having an apartment. So you know, this is based on what I've seen, and I feel that this is what's happening. What I can tell you, what is also happening on the flip side, is that incarceration rates of Black men are steadily climbing in Toronto as well. In America, they have the stop and frisk. In Toronto, we have the version of the called carding, which is just going up. It's mainly racialized profiling, where in particular, non-white males are being entered into the database just to be entered into the database, similar to the stop and frisk situation. So that's basically from why I'm saying that, you know, I think that Black men are catching it more. I mean, you hear about it more because, you know, there's Black women that are talking about it because at least they're there to talk to voice it. My more immediate concern as well is the fact that there's complete elimination of Black male voices, and that's largely due to the fact that they're not getting hired as much anymore. So I hope that answers it.
For sure. We did just read The Man Knot. That is focused on racist misandry, Black males' vulnerability in the United States. But I would submit that is worldwide to hear those same patterns. Dr. Curry said the exact same thing, that the system of white supremacy racists will frequently make it a little easier for Black females to get really low-level, ridiculous employment, and then give no employment to Black males, the homelessness, most likely to be homeless, most likely to be incarcerated. Dr. Curry gave all those statistics for the stateside. Now we got our report north of the border. No wall there. Still haven't heard the report to keep the Canadians out there.
Also, sorry, Cass, there is also one more thing, because I know that you did mention in one of your earlier broadcasts about the moratorium of suspending racialized public servants. Racialized is the term that's replaced visible minorities. That's really all under the umbrella of non-white. Just the term du jour, term of the day. And what's interesting about it is that it's coming from 20 Black employees. But the thing is that, again, they're coming from mostly women. So, you know, there's the question again, where are the males? Like, how, like, it's just the elimination of voices is also something that we need to tune into. So thank you once again.
For sure. Stacey in the UK, did you have commentary? She might just be listening. Grand, I'll check in to make sure as we proceed. Other folks.
Hello, Gov.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I wanted to respond to the callers in Toronto, correct?
Yes, ma'am. That's B in Toronto.
Yes. Okay. So I think one thing that I did learn from Yvette Cornell, I want to say last year, one thing we have to realize under the system of racism, white supremacy, is that when times get tight, the first people, obviously, they're going to be affected are Black people, and the first people in that group are Black males. So when you say you go into school districts and you don't see Black males, you're seeing the result of a group of people that have been allowed or, you know, that is part of their power. They're part of what Neely Fuller calls the powerful class. They're able to determine who comes, who goes in employment, and the employment that we're in, education, for the most part, when you're hired as a permanent teacher, it has great benefits. And so, yes, these white women are going to hoard and hog every opportunity, you know, that there is in the education sector, except for paraprofessional, secretary, the janitorial staff anything that would be considered quote unquote menial. I substitute teach and I walk into these schools and people expect me to either be a paraprofessional or part of an adjunct after school program or something. They don't expect me to be a substitute teacher, you know. So I know if they're giving me that attitude when a black male comes in, he's going to experience something worse. Plus, getting back to what Yvette Carnell said, white supremacy, as even though it hasn't been replaced with a system of justice, is kind of on the way out because a lot of the dealings by these corporations and businesses and politicians have been bad decisions. And what Yvette said is wealth is calcifying. And because wealth is calcifying, that means I'm not going to allow certain people who I already consider undesirable to get positions in fields that pay well. As a matter of fact, I'm going to make it harder for everyone else that I consider non-white or whatever to get in. But I will allow a few. So when the white women were talking to you about diversity, I do believe and suspect they actually believe in their mind they were being diverse by hiring you.
Sorry about that.
Hello?
Sorry about that. You said they were being, the white women were being diverse in hiring be in Toronto.
I think they probably, you know, like a self, you know, oh yes, look at us. We're letting one of them in. You know, we can't be racist. We can't be prejudiced. We have a black woman on the staff and that'll be it. And the only other black person you've probably seen in that school, again, if it's not secretary, paraprofessional, or it's probably somebody cleaning up, or at least that's been my experience, you know. So that's what I would say as to where the black men, I do think and believe there are black men going into education. I see them going to school. I've met them, but a lot of them have been turned down by because Teach for America in here in America is a big thing where they're not letting people come into certain school districts. They're leaving those job opportunities in education open and available for white people, especially white women, so they can go in, get their time in the field, and get their student loans forgiven, okay? And they use intercity, quote-unquote, intercity schools, urban schools, and charter schools as their little test sites for whether or not, you know, getting their feet wet. Which I apologize, Gus, is a metaphor for getting that first experience. And then they move on to better school districts and wealthier districts. I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Only request that metaphors not be used on the compensatory call-in. I might point them out from time to time or make note of them, but I only ask on the compensatory call-in that they not be used, so no problem. I will say I am greatly suspicious and emphatically do not think the system of white supremacy is on the wane, in quotes, but VGQ, everyone has their position. I don't know what people, because I've heard that from others. My vision of what that would look like is substantially difficult. Like being on the wane would mean moving closer to justice. And yeah. Anyway, Stacy in the UK, we'll try again. Did you have commentary?
Hi, girls. Can you hear me this time?
Yes, ma'am. We'll give our obligatory timestamp 3:13 a.m. Saturday morning, London time. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I was actually trying to speak before, so apologies for that. I don't know what's happening. Yes, a few updates. I just wanted to respond to the point made last week. I think it started with B in Toronto about the car issue and finding that useful. I have to say for myself, I did not learn my lesson. That happened to me in an earlier role. And I think this definitely has been a theme throughout my career, where, and I suspect it's the case for other non-white people, where you encounter racism within different employers or jobs that you've had. Things happen and you don't follow through because you're trying to escape the racism one place, and you hope that in this new role things will be better. And certainly for me, in the organisation where I'm working now, I think around about 2011, I bought myself a house. I was working with the team that I am in now, but at that point I wasn't formally part of their team. I was just brought in to work on a particular project. And things seemed to be going well, and I think it's the love bombing that was mentioned. You get comfortable and these people can give it the impression that they're really pleased to have you working on them. And even then, to be honest, if I really think back, there were signs, there were plenty of signs within the wider team that really this was heading to be a very nasty experience. However, the head of the team at the time was definitely working overtime on her love bombing strategy. And I got comfortable. It definitely wasn't for me about needing any validation, but I got comfortable. And I, somewhere in the back of my mind, didn't want to, or was hoping that, okay, now I can just relax. So if I talk about things outside of work, it wouldn't be a problem. But anyway, I think I was dealing with lots of issues with builders and stuff at that point. So I, you know, sometimes you're venting. And I'd mentioned the fact that I'd bought a house. And I just think that all of that was the start of racists conspiring. And needless to say, you know, 3 years, because the teams did merge, and 3 years later, just being continuously harassed in that job. And that's why it ended up that I ended up having to put in a large grievance. You know, just all kinds of things where they try to sabotage you. So I would say these patterns are there. And for me, it certainly was a case that I didn't follow through with the experiences and really observe. Now, this is how they behave. Do not reveal your personal business, and really and truly don't get comfortable. I mentioned before Christmas a non-white female who had been asked to work, to pick up work, which is 3 grades above her job, but not obviously not get paid. Sorry, I'm just laughing as I say, because it's so crazy. Anyway, needless to say, she resolved that issue and they brought in the person who they had recruited to the post earlier, which meant that that work was taken forward. Anyway, she, before Christmas, had the opportunity to apply for the same role that she does now, but in the political office. And so it's a better opportunity for her. It's only a few shekels more, but it's a good opportunity for her to be working in that role. So we did some interview prep before Christmas. I mean, she was very good anyway. She would, even without any help from me, I believe she would have got that post. Anyway, she was successful. Before Christmas, she spoke to one of the directors that she supports to just tell her, look, you know, I've got the role. The woman opened her eyes wide. I think she was shocked, said congratulations, and literally got up and walked out the door. It was so hostile. So ever since then, she has been steadily getting mistreated by the two directors that she's working for. And I think it was last week, she had sent, this non-white female had sent an email. She's actually in a different team to the one I'm in, but so she sent the email to a couple of teams requesting some information. And one of the directors sent a reply and copied in everyone, basically belittling this non-white female. for the email that she'd sent, basically saying the request is too vague, it would be better if you clarified, da-da-da-da-da. And I thought to myself, hang on a minute. I thought the email went to about 50 people. I was trying to work out how many people that email had been sent to. I was told by the non-white female it was actually 70 people. And it was appalling. And she'd spoken to her mother, because she's actually quite young. She was so upset. And her mother had told her, A, you know, just don't respond in a negative way by email or anything, and to expect it. And when we were speaking about it yesterday, I'd said to her, look, I understand, because her frustration, because at first she felt her mum, she didn't find her mum's her response too helpful. But I said, look, people have said that to me in the past. And at the time, it seems like a bit of strange advice, but it is actually the case. It's good advice. And, you know, I think there's probably a way for us to think about how we give advice to people when, you know, if you are going to give advice, even if it's your children, just to explain exactly what you mean by that, because otherwise it just seems very sort of curt and not really sensitive enough. But the fact is, I said to her, yeah, expect it. And between now and when you get the start date, which they're stalling on, agreeing her start date, what you do is you expect to see a lot more of that hostility, and which is taking place, because they were even making calls to her at 7:30 in the morning, which I hadn't done in the past. And I said, whatever the issue is, the fact is you've got that new job. They know you're going to do really well in that role, and that's the problem. And all they're trying to do it now at the moment is antagonize you so you do something where they can sabotage you. And she understood that. And I gave her an example of exactly what had been done to me. I was working with a particular race soldier. This was years ago. At the time, we had got on relatively well. However, I could see the way she used to operate with other people, whites, and more in the field we're in, it's mainly whites, more senior than her. So I knew she was a relatively uncouth race soldier. And what she'd done in the past is she'd sent really aggressive emails that our director at the time, at that point was a female, had basically said to her, look, not only were they hostile emails, but they were also grammatically incorrect, really bad. So she was pulled up on it and told that she should check her correspondence with me before she goes out. Now, obviously, I was actually reporting to this woman in terms of my work plan. So that wasn't the easiest thing. But she was told she had to do it, which was really difficult for me, actually. But, you know, I was able to handle that in a way which didn't make her feel like I was trying, well, as far as I could, trying to tell her what to do, because at the end of the day, it had nothing to do with me. Anyway, so we got to a position where she was less sensitive about the fact that she had to run things by me. But what that did give me is real insight into her craziness. And when she was very poor with her sort of technical knowledge. So there were times when she just didn't know how to do some very basic things on the computer. And she, you know, sometimes I'd help her out, and when she was in a mood, good mood, it wasn't a problem. However, there were times when she got particularly sensitive, like she wanted to do it herself. So I thought, okay, fine. And then I realized, you know what, I'm not going to train you how to do this, because it's useful for me to when you don't know how to do things properly, because that means I get to see things that I might not otherwise get to see. Anyway, because she was so technically inept, a couple of years later, things were tense, and she had sabotaged me enough to get removed off the project. But I was technically working for another organisation, so it meant that I would be going back to my employers. And she had agreed, between us, we'd agreed my work between now and when I was going back to my main employer, and that was agreed with my director. The work plan was shared electronically. around that time, BlackBerries were quite new, and she'd got a new BlackBerry. She didn't know how to use it properly. So probably about a week later, she had sent an email to my director, who was a new director at that point in Mail. And he basically lying about me and some of the work that I was doing. Now, because she was so technically inept, she copied me in unintentionally. I said, this is really interesting. So I emailed her back, and I said, well, I'll wait for the Mail to respond to the wider issue. However, I'm not sure what you're talking about, because did we not agree what my work would be over this period? So, well, how can you now be claiming basically that I wasn't doing X, Y, Z, or that she didn't know what I was doing? And left it at that. Then when it came to the point that I was about to leave, I had kept asking her, do you want me to do a handover? Oh, no, it's fine, everything's fine. Don't worry about it. I didn't trust her at all. I did my handover, and at the time I was managing several multi-million pound sort of budget lines. So it was important for me, not for her, to make sure that there was a note provided, detailed note of what the position was on all of those budget areas. And she then, so I emailed it back, and this was on my last day, and I'd emailed her back and said, this is the position on all of these, the handover note, and copied in my director, the Mail. She then emailed back and she's like, oh, thank you so much. This is so comprehensive. Left it at that. Now, I then sent an email to everybody in the unit where I'd been based, because in that morning I had had to meet with the Mail director in my main office. What I didn't do was then go to that other unit. I just thought it's not worth me sort of spending time on the train, because I'll need to do the handover, and that was my priority. Now, there was somebody who I used to manage in that unit who had asked me a couple of weeks before, oh, this stupid race soldier had wanted to arrange some sort of gift and nonsense for me as part of my leaving, and he wasn't sure if I would want it, because she'd obviously tasked him with this little exercise. I said, do not bother. Anyway, he, under duress, I guess, had to do it for her. But I had a feeling they were going to be doing this little bit of nonsense, but, I mean, it wasn't a priority for me. I'd already said, don't bother. Anyway, so apparently they had flowers and chocolates, all kinds of crap, which I didn't know, obviously, because I was in another building. And so all I did was when I finished up, I agreed with my director that I would spend the day there anyway, because I had stuff to do the handover, and he was fine with that. And then I sent an email to everybody finishing, just saying goodbye, or I sent it to the people who I was interested in sending the email to, and that didn't include that race soldier who I was reporting to there. Anyway, then maybe about a week later, because apparently she was telling people she had no idea just how much work I'd done for her. And so when things suddenly came to light that she actually didn't, or when it became apparent to her that there was a lot of detail that she did not know, she then sent basically what I would regard as a ransom note / I don't know, emotional tirade email to me, basically attacking me and saying that I had, you know, I was so insensitive, people had brought flowers and chocolates for me, and I didn't even go back to Clive. And she was lying about the, you know, not knowing information, and accusing me of doing all kinds of things, and, you know, had copied in my director. I thought, this crank, I'm not even getting into this now. I no longer work there. So I emailed her back. No, sorry, I did not email her back. I emailed my director. I copied her in. I copied in HR, and I copied in my union rep, and basically said, I don't know what she's talking about in terms of these claims that she's making. You were copied in on my handover note and her response stating that the information that she had not requested, because she didn't actually request any kind of handover, was, even though I'd offered to do it, the information she stated was comprehensive. And furthermore, I would be grateful if you would request that she ceases to send me any more notes of this tone, and left it at that. I then had a follow-up meeting with him, and he did say, oh, just because she said certain things doesn't mean we believe her. And he then asked me if I was interested in doing any work that was still related to that program, but just from the perspective of the team that I was now in with him. And I looked at him and I said, because obviously I knew they were, between the two of them, they were conspiring in some way. And I looked at him and I said, my understanding from both you and this race soldier, female, is that there was no longer a role for me on that project. Why are you now suggesting that I can pick up bits and pieces? And needless to say, he didn't answer me. He left it at that. I think he got the message, don't even bother. And essentially what had happened is that she suddenly dawned on her how much she didn't know as a result of her little antics to try and get me removed off the project. And that was probably why she didn't want a formal handover in the beginning. Gus, I've been speaking for a while, so I will mute my line there. But yeah, just to say, follow the lessons through, because there are patterns that, you know, throughout our career. And it's just about being consistent, which is something that I never was. I'll mute my line, Gus.
Context of white supremacy. Much obliged. Stacy in London. Follow the logic. Look for the patterns. If you are following logic, it can be easier to see those patterns. And hopefully, if you're following logic, it can also help you be more consistent with regards to how you apply your counter-racist code. In terms of the job, we talked about that so much in terms of sharing personal information and whites being vindictive. Oh, I'm getting a house and it's not, oh, let me bring you a pound cake or a new toaster, you know, get you a doormat. And it's, how can we get this nigger out of her job? That's been the response worldwide. A new car or a vacation or whatever whites deem that you should not have. Standard operating procedure in terms of whites lying, withholding information, the tackiness in including you in the email where they're talking bad about you and reneging on what you all have already agreed upon. Even that kind of highlights what we've said consistently, that whites do not have to necessarily be competent to get hired, that you can have lots, you can and do in the system of white supremacy, do have lots of whites who are not well informed about their particular job, but they are experts on the practice of white supremacy racism, thus they have a job. Let's see, are there folks that we have missed completely? Even though this is not the compensatory call-in, I said I will point out from time to time metaphors of note, not that there's anything incorrect about using them, just bones, teeth, calcify, wealth does not. It was said in explaining that white supremacy is waning that wealth is calcifying. That is a metaphor. Just point those out of note. Folks that we missed totally, are there people we have not heard from at all who have a hand up?
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida. Did you know the Miami airport is supposed to be closed this weekend?
I think I did see something like that on the news a few hours ago about the TSA situation and the shutdown. I think I did hear about that, something about the Miami airport.
Any thoughts as to whether or not that will impact a substantial number of black workers, non-white workers?
I think it will, definitely. It's going to affect, especially because they were showing the inability to generate income or to get paid. So is this, I won't say shocking, but it's unfortunate for the victims of racism that are affected by the that situation from the race soldier president.
Right on. I'm sure if you had other comments you wanted to share, feel free.
Yes, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I had a few incidents from the past couple of weeks. I wanted to start out on the first one. I don't think I shared this one, but it was a customer that came in, and I was writing out. We have these little slips that we write on to show how much the copies cost that we had to process. So, you know, I had found I believe it was a child support order for this guy. It was a white guy, racist suspect. And as he was about to pick the paper up, he said, yeah, this is it. You know, he said, this is the Mandingo that's going to solve this all. This is what he said. Now, I have no idea what that's got to do with you finding the correct document. This is the Mandingo that's going to solve this all. So he gets up and he walks away, you know, I guess polite or kind or whatever, you know, but he made that comment. The second one is I saw the commercial during the lunch break, and there was a room maybe with about three people in it, and I think it was a Liberty Mutual, I think that's what it's called, insurance commercial. I think many people may have seen this, but they're always standing in front of some kind of, I guess, area, I think in the New York area, by the Statue of Liberty, and it's next to the water and everything. And it's this guy, he's in a dark shadow silhouette, and, you know, he has his deep voice. I know people seen this on television sometimes. They have a person who they want to remain anonymous, so-called anonymous, and they have witness on the bottom of the screen. So this guy's just saying, you know, I'm getting good insurance, you know. And, you know, because me being a man, and then he says, or a woman, doesn't matter. You know, we can both save from getting good insurance. So this white woman, right, she comes forward and she flashes a camera, like a photography camera, and it flashes and it shows that it's a white man. And they say, Mr. Landry, I think, and it's a white woman and a black male talking to each other in the background. The white woman looks over and says, Mr. Landry. So the black shadow is gone, and you can see it's a white man. He runs and jumps off of the balcony or whatever and jumps into the water. So I think it was racism in that. Like, I don't know if anybody's ever seen that commercial. Like my
I've now seen it.
Oh, okay, see. So, yeah. My next one is, there was a child, I guess they may be classified as Indian or East Indian, and it was a baby, right? Like maybe 1 year old or whatever. So they have to take pictures for the passports. So the baby had melanin. So the mother was like, hey, this picture looks a little dark. He looks dark in this picture. White woman says, who took the picture? My coworker. Oh, well, you know, just wait till the picture gets printed out. You know, it tends to be lighter. You know, this machine tends to be very deceptive. And, you know, I kept that in my mind, you know, whatever that meant, because I guess the mother had an issue with the child's photograph being dark, I guess. My next one is, I don't know if anybody has ever mentioned the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. So I was talking to my supervisor about it. So I was like, I haven't been participating in what so-called Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, people being very festive and decorating the area with different things. But when it came to this was called a federal holiday because courthouse is closed. So people pretty much, I wouldn't say forced, but it's known for it to be acknowledged in that way. It's no business on that, I think, third Monday of January. So I'm like, why the inconsistency? I'll see. it's not like I was encouraging, like, I guess, commercializing the holiday. I'm saying, like, you know, why is it treated so unjustly? And the white woman agreed with me because I said mainly I wanted to bring up concept of justice, especially since we work in a courthouse where people come here to obtain justice. So I was trying to use some logic. So she goes to the white people, I guess the white warden, and she CC'd and sent me the email and said, okay, you know, I'm okay with that. And the white guy says we can have a MLK celebration. Now, I didn't use them terms because I said I don't want this to amount to just sitting in proximity with somebody and putting food on a plate and calling it justice. You know, I was speaking, I want to say aggressively, just being focused. Like, I'm trying to make it a point for people to stop mistreating each other. So I guess she was saying, you know, you need to just speak out on this, you know. And I know you might not want to do any luncheons or anything like that because I was emphatic about that. So it was this morning, and I said, no, I wasn't really trying to do any luncheons. I just wanted to just put that concept of justice out there. And so she came out to the desk area, and we were talking about this, and it was like maybe one couple out there and some of the coworkers. And I was like, yeah, people pretty much, they just circumvent and ignore the holiday or the occasional day, and people don't care. And she looked at me, she said, I asked her, am I right? She says, yes. So I was like, yeah, so that's what I'm talking about, and how people get treated here or mistreated here, but they're too scared to say it. And, you know, people rely on their income. They want to make money and everything, and I understand that. So they're not going to tell you. So she went off and sent the blackmail, the email saying that, you know, I had concerns about the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, things like that. So we got into this, I guess, meeting room or whatever, because I never really done that. And I just pretty much said what I was going to say. I said, whomever in here may have ideas for how people can, I guess, commemorate the day or whatever, you know, that's fine. You know, you said what you said. And I just wanted to say there's one quick thing. People shouldn't be mistreated. It shouldn't be allowed for people to be mistreated. So I just want everybody in here, I didn't care who it was, white, non-white, you leave out of here, and that's pretty much the concept. And, you know, they go on to talk about food and stuff like that. So it was the black male in there, and it was another black female who I speak with. So she was like, so you pretty much talking about a forum that they can have where people can air out their grievances or whatever the term that she used. But I was saying, well, you know, whatever idea that you can contribute, you know, I didn't want to downplay or criticize, especially with a lot of victims in there. So I didn't want to criticize any ideas. So I just stated what I stated, and I just listened to what everybody else has. But that happened today with the meeting, and those other things happened earlier this week. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Wow. that is commendable to, you know, make that request on the job in terms of how people use their time and energy for the Martin Luther King holiday. What inspired that? Had you been thinking about saying something about this for a while, or did this, was this just a on the spot type of thing?
Well, I had, because I know because of the racism they had they've been practicing, like from different people that I noticed. And I just said, you know what, I'm just going to just withdraw my resources, time and energy from participating in these type of things, the birthdays and the Halloween stuff like that. And I pointed out the incorrect associations with darkness and blackness, you know. So I was like, I'm not really doing it. And then I said, man, you know, I had been working there for years and I had noticed it, see. So, and no constructive acknowledgement whatsoever on this particular day that's coming up for Dr. King. So I pointed that out and they agreed immediately too, because it was, they sent the email back saying, hey, you know, usually for the office, we only celebrate the 4th of July and the, I guess, Christmas holiday and all of the other holidays, like, I guess, Halloween and, I don't know, maybe St. Patty's or whatever. It's pretty much set to the other department. So they pretty much put it back off on me, like, oh, well, do you have any ideas? And I told them what it was. So, yeah, they didn't want to really, like, come speak to me. And then also the warden, she stuck her head in there and she was like, you know, thank you all for your ideas. And, you know, it's really good to come up with something like this to make the office a better place. But, you know, I came up with it. She can't even look me in the eye. So, yeah, that report pretty much still that I gave last year. Yeah, it's still affecting her, I think. So, yeah, she hadn't been trying to talk to me. And yeah, that's all I have.
That sort of suggestion, that should land you a fourth spot in the newsletter, like one of our great employees, and making sure that we remember we're at a courthouse. We're about the production of justice. That's what Dr. King gave his life fighting for. Like, right on. Put that on the front of the newsletter. See if we can get some more of the little colored children to come and get in a photograph. That's, you know, great publicity for the MLK holiday. Wow. Put that out front. That's best thing in Florida in, since Governor DeSantis took office. The, let's see, the Mandingo. Wow. Like, that's immediate cow, but like, that's, I feel like me too. Like, I feel like anyway, that's right up there with Beaner. That's like the guy at the New York Times saying that he didn't know what Beaner meant. A white person calling or using the term Mandingo at all and saying, oh, I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know that had any connection to racism. And specifically, that is a sexual, the man, not race, class, genre, and the dilemmas of black manhood. It's not just racism. That is specifically connected to a homoerotic, sexualized depiction of not just the black male, but the black male as a phallus. Frantz Fanon, James Baldwin, the whole history. I am sure you can do a search of Dr. Carolyn West. I'm sure you can do a search of pornography and you'll come up with trillions of titles. Mandingo and rah, rah, rah. I mean, that, and to be using that sort of language in a workplace context. Let's see. How are machines deceptive? That would be one I might even write down and wait like a week and come back. Susan, do you remember you were talking about the machine? The good colored folks came in to get the passport photograph for the child and they thought it was too dark. And you said that machine is how are machines deceptive? And just wait to see what the response is. Do you think the machine is deceptive, sir?
I do not, because see, the reason I wanted to report that because this, and she's a younger white woman too, and there's been a pattern with that where she referred to as a change or a coin receptacle or whatever, where people put money and bills and coins in to get their copies. So she would use this. It's codified too, because she said it the same way every time. So she's like, oh, well, you know, just wait. It'll play with your emotions, but it'll give you your money. Now, I never heard nobody say that to a customer about just tell them to press the silver tab. Don't say it'll play with your emotions. I don't get that. So, yeah, that reminded me of that. And that's another machine, like something that gives you your change. When you put a dollar in and you get two copies, that's 30 cents. Okay, so you get the remainder of your change back. So, you know, they'll be like, well, where my change at? Or, you know, somebody might just say, you know, what do I do next? And she said, well, you know, you just press the silver tab. It'll play with your emotions, but it'll give you the money eventually.
Mm. White women, not machines, are deceptive and racist, in my opinion. That even kind of remind me of Dr. Kevorkian a little bit, his premise of referring to machines as black people. That's, you know, the way that whites think black people are not humans. They are machines. And that's the way that they talk about machines frequently, as though they're talking about Negroes. But, the machine is deceptive. They don't even refer. And that even stood out to me more because it is infrequent that I hear whites refer to other white people specifically as being deceptive. I mean, how often do you hear that? Where a white person says, oh yeah, that Ted, you got to watch him. Ted is deceptive. You got to watch him. Like, how often, unless it's President Trump, other than him, I don't hear that very often. A white person reference another white person specifically and, oh yeah, you got to watch her. That Becky, she is deceptive. She'll fool you. The no criticizing ideas of non-white people, I like anywhere. I think that is fantastic. That is counter-racist code, especially in the workplace. VGQ, they can say whatever they say. If you have a difference of opinion, you don't have to call them names or whatever. You can just state, you know, this is my opinion on, you know, whatever the issue is, and these are the reasons why. Did we miss anybody last few months before we wrap things up? Any folks that we totally missed who have commentary or a question you wanted to respond to? Grant, we got everybody. If you participated or not, if you're with us, if you have a comment, question, anything you want to share with us in the last few moments?
Beth, can I clarify?
Let's see. We'll get Irie and then Stacy in the UK.
I will let Stacy go since she's
Go ahead, it's Stacey. Fine. Go ahead. It's fine.
Thank you. So yeah, I thought about what you said, and yes, words are important. So what I should have said, I didn't really think I had much time, but instead of wealth calcifying, there's just a big push to keep people from being able to fully function in the system of white supremacy, because there's a transition in the world as far as finance and the United States and our financial status. And I should have said that, not that white supremacy attitude, beliefs, and practices is on the way out. So that was part of the reason why I was saying white people won't be giving, you know, good jobs so much to non-white people, because these jobs are going away because of these bad or unjust business decisions and practices that have been done by racist white supremacists. Thank you. I'll mute my line. Good night, everyone.
Much obliged. Have a fantastic Louisiana evening, Irie. Let's see, Stacy in the UK.
I guess, yeah, I just wanted to add a few more points because you did mention the race soldier who I was just talking about, and the fact that she was incompetent but still employed. She was actually on six figures in terms of salary. So I just want to make that point. poor grammar. I was junior to her, having to check her correspondence. And she allegedly was on six, well, not allegedly, I know for a fact, she was on six figures. And when Thomas was giving his report, you did mention the fact that, or he mentioned the fact that the person used the collective we to indicate that they were about to apportion blame to a non-white victim. This same nurse soldier who I was talking about had, I mean, in terms of sort of work we do, sometimes when you're buying in or you're investing in various different programs, you might well slightly go over what funding you have, because sometimes you know, services may not run to cost, so you've got more money. You obviously don't enter into a contract with them, but you know, you plan for projects under spending. Now this female was just continuously planning on funding more and more projects, and we were in a meeting one day with another race soldier male, and I said to her, but you're already over budget. And she was, because she was planning to, you know, commission more work, and she's looking at me sort of blankly, and he sort of turned around and backed what I was saying. And so I thought, okay, now I need to make sure that she is very clear on where we are in terms of this program. So I did a report and I broke it down in detail. And this was set on another day. And she reviewed it and she said, oh, thank you for this. Oh, you do know this is how people get sacked, don't you? And I thought, okay, you're telling me right there exactly what you would have done anyhow, that this is you'd been allowed to just continue spending, even though the incompetence rested with her. And from that point on, I was very careful in making sure I gave her very detailed reports, and was another reason why when I left I gave her a very comprehensive handover report, which she actually didn't request. I'll mute my line there, Gus, but yeah, she was on six figures and incompetent.
President Donald J. Trump, you can pick lots of illustrations of racists who are incompetent about many, many things. They understand racism, white supremacy. We got these raping beaners. Got to get that wall. Put me in the White House. No more raping beaners. Anybody else comment before we conclude?
Yes, sir. I do have one young person that I coached in the late 90s. That's a employee of TFA that has a quote unquote wife and two kids, I'm aware of. Also, just a thought, when you mentioned about the airport being Miami International Airport being closed, if some of my high school classmates came back into town, and they should be attempting to try to leave either tonight or tomorrow. So I guess I better kind of like inform them whether or not, I don't know if they got the news either, because the, you know, 11 o'clock news is about to come on, but I don't know if they got a news either, but I guess the only other alternative would be to go to Fort Lauderdale airport for them to get back home. But that's interesting. I'm going to stay tuned. Thank you.
Absolutely. I'm sure that's going to disrupt lots of things for a lot of non-white people. I think if you're trying to get to Jamaica, I know that's when I had to fly out of Miami International. If you're trying to go to Jamaica, that is a very popular airport for travel to and from Jamaica, I would assume, a lot of the Caribbean. So I'm sure a lot of dark people are going to be having some difficulties for this weekend if they're trying to fly, thinking they're coming in from the Caribbean into Miami International and going someplace else. I did want to say also, since the word was used, Beaner, the tacky excuse that they gave in the New York Times crossword puzzle. Again, I think I can get this in the compensatory call in tomorrow, because the New York Times is big and then the crossword puzzle is big too. White people in words. But the excuse that they gave in the New York Times was they said Beaner and they were using it like in baseball to hit someone in the head. I don't watch baseball, but I am familiar with that term. I do know enough. Oh yeah, you throw the pitcher throws the ball and hit the batter in the head or close to it. It's what they will say is he beaned him, not Beaner. Beaned him. And if you look in the dictionary, which I just did, beaned, B-E-A-N-E-D, fourth definition, using it as a verb, a person's head typically when regarded as a sort. Oh, wait a minute. Wrong one. To hit someone in the head. Verb, here we go. Verb, hit someone on the head. Boone was nearly beamed by that wild pitch. That's what they say. I've never heard, in terms of a baseball reference, beaner, like the pitcher threw a beaner. I don't hear. I don't watch baseball. I didn't play baseball. That is not, anything that I have an interest in. But the passing knowledge that I have, it's beamed. He was beamed by a pitch. The pitcher beamed him. That's the way that it's used, not beaner. And again, they said in the report, the number one definition for the term beaner, most common used, white supremacist slur. White people, they always plead ignorant. Anytime a white person says their ignorance in the context of racism, white supremacy, they should not be believed. It should be that white person is being deceptive. I don't know about the machines that they got down at the Florida courthouse, but if a white person says, oh, I didn't know that. You mean I was being racist? I didn't know. They're being deceptive. That should be the default response. And I mean, it should take a whole lot of evidence for it. Oh, maybe they're not lying. Maybe they're not trying to get away. But until then, that white person is being deceptive. And that's all there is to say about that. We will be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll review the New York Times ignorance about beaners and other things. Thanks for the folks who tuned in all around the world. Hope it was worthy of your time and energy on a Friday evening. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. We have lots of problems worldwide. I don't think being under the influence will help us solve any of our problems or help us better utilize our time and energy as victims of white terrorism. In addition to being sober every time we are in a vehicle, let's buckle up every single time, driver or passenger, that we are out driving. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cows signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
Problem. A victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.